Listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Yes, good evening. Season's greetings, everyone. It's 8:02 in the p.m. here in Chicago, Illinois, and that could only mean one thing and one thing only. It's Simple Flight Radio. You put the two and two together every Sunday night. We're coming at you live from the KPWK Airport here in Chicago, Illinois, and we're up to some good tonight. Now, a familiar face is not with us tonight, but we found another face for radio. Mr. Alex Katulis, how you doing?
Doing good.
Awesome. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
Unfortunately, Mark couldn't be with us tonight. He had some holiday engagements tonight. But we've got Alex with us tonight. We've got a great show this evening, but I'm glad you're here.
Glad to be here as well. I can tell the story to all my friends all at once.
And it's going to be a good story that it is, and all that. Hey, we even have a live studio audience tonight. Can you believe it? You know, this thing, I think you started the trend.
Yeah, it's nice to stop in and hang out for Hangar Talk and listen to you guys.
Yeah, it's not bad. We're glad you make it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So anyway, we have we've got Mr. Sam Scales on the show, or with us tonight. He's listening live. He was on the show on one of the original shows. You remember that?
You know, I didn't listen to the first few shows, actually. I came in probably about halfway here, but I keep listening to the podcast in the car just to kind of catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sam was with us calling in live from Florida last time we talked to him, but he's back on winter break from college, and I went flying with him earlier today. It was awesome.
Oh, where'd you guys go?
Yeah, we went over to Pilot Pete's. We had a... we'll touch on this a little bit later, but remember that pot roast that we had on the...
Hutchinson,
yeah. Kansas? Well, they have it right down the street at the Schaumburg Airport, Pilot Pete's.
Tastes the same.
Oh, my goodness. It's maybe even better.
But that's no fun. It's too close.
It's a $1,000 pot roast. You know?
Well, there's no such thing as a $100 hamburger anymore, is
no,
there?
No, I don't think so. You could get a $100 hamburger at the Schaumburg Airport.
Okay. Yeah, that's
how the waitress. It's the name of the hamburger. Mm-hmm. So we took Sam's brother up flying today. He had a lot of fun, but he was actually asking about that. What's the $100 hamburger? I don't think he really got it for right off the bat, but, you know, once you start paying for aviation, you really realize, yeah, a $100 hamburger is a very real thing.
Right.
But anyway, thanks for joining us, everyone. We're glad to be back live from the KPWK Airport here at the Signature Airport, Signature FBO. They do a great job for us every week, and you know we can't enjoy the space enough. Looking out, overlooking the ramp tonight. It's kind of empty out there, isn't it?
No, it's empty. But you know those guys, Signature down in Kansas City, they did a great job as well.
They really did too. I hope they should be listening tonight.
I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. They're a little friendly competition between the Signature and Kansas City versus the ones up here in Chicago.
Yeah, it was a good time, though.
You know what I did get, though? I went into our King Air office, and Signature left a little Christmas present for us. They left some holiday candies and all that, just saying thanks for being a customer.
Yeah, they did the same thing over here at the club at Leading Edge, and I think I probably ate about half of them.
I remember. I saw you eat about half of them.
Well, you know, I haven't had those for a long time. We used to sell those World's Finest Chocolates when you were a kid, and so these are a little heavier on the chocolate, but it's okay.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Yeah, you just got to watch your gross weight next time you take off.
Less 1 gallon less of gas, that's all.
Yeah, exactly. I think I figured that math out on the trip that, you know, hey, I'm a pretty big limiting factor in the useful load. And
you and me both.
Yeah.
let's just blame the plane.
Yeah. Well said. I wonder if Santa's sleigh has a useful load. I don't know. You know, we have Mark is not here, but he's in here with us in spirit. And every single night, we're not going to break it tonight, he delivers the Sunday night chuckle.
Okay.
Probably one of the coolest parts of the show. And he has a nice holiday joke for us. And, you know, we got to play it because it's awesome. So this is Mark's holiday present from him to all of our listeners. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go.
Good evening, everybody. It's Mark Eppner. I'm so sorry I can't be with you, but I have an opportunity to be with some family that's not normally in town. So I'm taking advantage of that, but I will be listening to the show. But my obligations are obvious. Each week I do the Sunday Night Chuckle, and while I'm going to take a little liberty here and repeat a Sunday Night Chuckle that I did back in August, figuring the time was right now, being that around Christmas, and more important, knowing that when we did this joke the first time, we probably had all of 5 or 10 listeners. So for those 5 or 10 people, excuse me, I think this is a great joke. And it's perfect because it's Christmas time. And it makes us think of things and people like Santa Claus. Well, Santa Claus, like all pilots, he gets regular visits from the FAA and has to take regular check rides, biennial flight reviews. And so one Christmas, just before the December 25th arrived, the FAA showed up to give a check ride. And so in preparation for that, Santa had the elves wash his sled and bathe all the reindeer. He got out his logbook and made sure all the paperwork was in order. So then the examiner came in and walked around the sleigh and made sure that everything was in order. He checked the reindeer harnesses, the landing gear, even the lights, including Rudolph's red nose. He painstakingly reviewed Santa's logbook for weight and balance calculations because of the enormous payload that Santa was going to carry. So finally, he signed off and said, okay, let's go for our flight, and they were ready for the check ride. Santa got in, fastened his seatbelt, shoulder harness, checked the compass. But as he looked over his shoulder, he saw the FAA examiner get in, and to his surprise, the examiner was carrying a shotgun. And Santa said, what's that for? The examiner winked at him and leaned over and whispered in his ear, and he goes, well, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but you're going to lose an engine on takeoff.
I love that joke. It's awesome.
That's good. It's
he
good.
Told it the first episode that he came on the show, and I was in stitches. I was literally crying. And I love that joke. It was awesome.
Well, I'm glad you guys replayed it, especially for the timing.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a joke.
Yeah.
If you can't afford a doctor, what do you do?
I don't know. I go to the county hospital?
No, yeah, that's a good answer, but it's not the one I'm looking for. You go to the airport. You can get a free x-ray, a free breast examination, and if you mention Al-Qaeda, you can probably get a free colonoscopy as well.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah, I seem to always get that, you know, not because I want to see the doctor. Maybe I profile poorly. I don't know.
I don't know, but that's the beauty of general aviation. You know, you park, go on the ramp, you walk through. You don't have to deal with any of that. So it really is.
It's awesome.
You know, I kind of get spoiled with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a nice little little perk of general aviation.
Well, there's no doubt.
You just show up and go for it. Hey, they even book hotel rooms for you. Just call them up and say, hey, I need 2 rooms, and bam, you show up.
We did it all the way there.
We did it. It was awesome. But before we get into what the journey that we had in this week in, you know, our aviation pathways, Mark did something pretty cool. He wanted to make sure that we shared. And I found it pretty awesome because of his value of the flying club. He was out invited to go out flying with another club member today, and they developed a pretty cool story. So real quick, let's listen to hear what Mark did this week in aviation.
Well, Al, the other obligation I have is, of course, to talk about this week in aviation, and I had a great week. I flew many days, and had some great experiences. But just this morning, I got up early and met a fellow club member over at the airport, and it was a beautiful VFR morning. So we went flying. I was just there to sit right seat and enjoy the view. We flew out to DeKalb and did a couple landings there. And then we headed back, and when we got back, all of a sudden the visibility started dropping, the clouds started dropping. What was a severe clear day, very quickly it turned into a relatively low overcast, such that we did a 180 degree turn, but the clouds were still coming in. And so what was really cool is we got a pop-up IFR clearance. The pilot was VFR only, but of course I have my rating. And we took the Dakota, and we got a pop-up. We're in the environment, picking up ice, and shot an ILS into Pewaukee, or Papa Whiskey Kilo, of course, affectionately now called Chicago Executive. And I tell you what, both of us were pumped when we hit the ground. I shouldn't say hit the ground, when we landed and got out of the airplane. It was exciting for him to see that, and I just felt like we both learned a lot. And it was just such a great day, and from a, like I say, a starting out a severe clear day where we could see forever, and we flew low to the ground, and then having to go in the environment with the picking up of ice, and successfully working with ATC, just a great approach. And the thing is, I let him fly it. I was there, you know, I was doing the scan and doing all the radios and kind of talking to him. So I really felt like I added value to his day as well. So. You try and top that for your week in aviation, although I think you can when we hear what you guys are going to be talking about for the next hour and a half or so. So my best wishes to you and your family and every one of our listeners and their families for a safe and happy holiday season, and we'll talk to you soon.
Well, Mark, that sounds like a cool little experience, doesn't it?
No, it is. That's great.
Absolutely. But we had a pretty awesome week in aviation, did we not?
No, it was wonderful. I mean, I wish it was actually Monday again.
Absolutely. So it started on this little special holiday edition of Simple Flight Radio. We're going to have this what we're going to talk about is worthy of hangar talk almost 100% of the show, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, I would say it's exactly. You just can't dedicate a half hour to
it. No, absolutely not. So we're going to spend the entire time just going through our adventure. And it started almost immediately after last week's show.
Right, Monday, the next morning.
Yeah, the next morning. Why don't you kick it off?
Okay. Well, you know, I have about 280 hours prior to this, prior to my IFR training, which I started with you last Monday. I did take a handful of lessons prior to that before we had some engine work that had to be done on the plane, and we were plagued with some maintenance issues, that sort of thing. But the IFR is something that I always wanted to start working on. And I didn't really want to do it old school, I guess you can say, where, you know, you come into the school or into the club and meet with your instructor and, you know, go up a couple times a week and maybe spend a couple hours doing it. And that's fine, but I really kind of want to do some marathon sessions because I can devote a little time somewhere between mid-December to early January where I can actually, you know, divorce myself from my obligations in society or whatever you want to call it and just concentrate on just doing this thing. So I started looking around to see what is it that I can do to kind of do like an IFR jumpstart where I can really get some training in and kind of bang as much out as I can without taking 6 months or 8 months or a year to get it complete.
Right.
So I started looking around the internet, and there are some, you know, there's some schools that you can go to and you can do it in 10 days, and that's fine, and you can actually do it in your plane. The only problem is that scheduling for me is an issue, and then the other side of it is there's a prerequisite that you have to have before you go there. You have to have your written exam out of the way, which I don't have, and I'm so bad at it. When I did my private pilot's license, my instructor Rob that took me through that and John, I think it was probably 30 days before my check ride when I finally went to go take the exam. I'm just, and who knows how long this will take, but the idea is that. That type of situation wouldn't have worked for me because I don't have that prerequisite done, and it wouldn't be cost effective to do that and waste the time down there.
Right.
There are some other programs where you can go, and you know, you do this Wild Alaskan Adventure, you know, mountains out in the West Coast and this and that. But again, the same deal. You have to have some stuff done before you go there prior.
Yeah.
And you're using their airplane versus your airplane. So all of a sudden you're learning on different equipment. And, you know, this guy has G1000 versus I have the Avidyne in my aircraft.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just like it doesn't work. So that's when I approached you. And, you know, it seemed like that you had the time to dedicate to do a type of a marathon session that we were talking about, maybe 5 or 6 hours in a day.
Right.
And I said, hey, why don't we take a ride out to my place in Arizona and do it that way?
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, go across the country. And, you know, I have the time. My wife says, just be back by Christmas. And I was like, all right, great.
That was a pretty awesome like time for, you know, just, hey, just be back by Christmas.
Yeah, so there's no rush. You know, you just kind of go, you know, you just kind of think about everything we want to do, and every time we landed, it's not like we had to turn around and be gone off the ground in 30 minutes. And, you know, I said this trip's going to be kind of like a wedding you go to. You know, you drive to the location, it feels like it takes forever to get there, and you get back home in a half hour and half the time. And this was kind of the same thing. I mean, to get to Arizona took a little while. Coming back, I mean, if we left a couple hours earlier the first day, we probably could have made it all the way home.
We could have, and that would have been a good, you know, in a way I wish we did, because that would have been a nice exposure to you to like a ton of flying in a day,
right?
You know, and then, but also it was just nice. It went, you know, in another way, in another scheme of things. I guess I was glad that we didn't, just because it was just nice and relaxing. You know, we flew till we were comfortable, and then bam.
Yeah, I mean, we made it all the way from Falcon Field, Arizona, to Kansas City, Missouri. And, you know, had a nice, you know, went out, we ate, had a nice rest, got up the next morning fresh, and then we were just 2.5 hours away from home. And, you know, it worked out well. But, I mean, it's, I think in the air flying time that day, I think we did 7 hours flying time.
Yeah, we did.
So it would have been.
That leg from Phoenix to Kansas City, that was like eight and a half hours.
Oh, was it? Okay, so I'm off a little bit.
Yeah. No, but that was still a good amount. That was like a full work day's worth of flying.
Right. So it was, it was good. It was good. I really enjoyed it. It was great exposure. And, I mean, really, this type of training for me suits me.
Yeah.
Maybe it might not be for everybody, but again, like I said, I didn't want to. You know, I hear the stories from people all the time. How long did it take to get your ticket? I know everybody learns differently, but I had one particular gentleman that said, "Well, figure how many hours it took you to get your private, and figure half of that to get your IFR."
Right.
And wasn't an answer that I liked.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have people that start and they get going, and then somewhere in the middle they stop, and then they pick it up again, and then they stop again. And my whole thing is that I just kind of want to be immersed in it.
Yeah, right.
And always have it fresh in my head and just constantly be going through stuff, as opposed to practicing one day, 1 week, and then getting together, kind of reviewing what we did last week, and then going forward from there.
Right.
And it's just, I'm not saying that's a waste of time. But if that's all somebody can do, you know, to get together once or twice a week, you know, then that's just what it is. But I was just fortunate enough to be in a spot where I can say, okay, I got some time here to take off and just, like I said, just get away and just do it.
Right. Absolutely. No, I thought that was such a great way. And, you know, from an instructional standpoint, it made it really easy. You know, I think that one thing that I learned is that, hey, you know, this is just a great way of doing it. It's very efficient. Yeah, we put 25 hours on the airplane.
Right.
Or 26 some hours. But still, you know, it didn't seem like it. You know, remember when we sat down for, it was either lunch or breakfast, and you said, you know, like, hey, what else do we have to cover?
Right.
You know, and I was sitting there, I think it was in Phoenix, and we pulled out the regulations. We went over a lot of this stuff, such as, you know, the IFR flight planning, fuel requirements, emergency procedures, approaches, so on and so forth. And by the time we got done with it, by the time we were done, we're like, oh, man, I had to almost pinch myself and say, hey, there's not much left that we have to cover.
Right.
Remember that? And that was kind of a weird feeling, you know?
It was weird, because I hear all the stories about, you know, I'm not saying this is easy by any means, but I just think I expected so much more that had to be going on. But the fact that you're just constantly doing it and learning just a new skill set every single day and adding to that building block and going forward, it just seems so natural. And, you know, you kind of retain everything, so it really worked out well.
Yeah, it did. I thought so, too. And it was just, it was not to mention all the benefits from an educational standpoint. We just had a lot of fun, too.
It was a blast. It was a blast. I mean, I think there were some other trips, some other locations we wanted to add that we didn't make it to because we got stuck in Albuquerque a little bit longer than we wanted to. But that's okay.
Yeah, right. You know. So let's go back to the beginning, right? Okay, so we had the radio show. You were here. You were listening in. And it was boom. You know, the next day, you know, Monday, we're out here at the airport and we go.
Right. Right.
But we didn't necessarily take off right away. We spent some time on the ground. Do you remember what the weather was like?
Yeah, you know, we did have some weather. I had, you know, a little weather, I think it was to the south, if I remember correctly.
And yeah.
I think the line that I had drawn out kind of took us just outside that storm. You know, thinking that that would be okay. You redrew it, and you took me a little bit, I think 50 miles further out.
Right.
Which made all the difference in the world.
Right. We were going to go to Galesburg, Illinois.
Right, right. And we ended up going to Dubuque.
Right.
If I remember correctly. And, you know, that did make all the difference in the world. And that extra 50 miles, you know, as Mark Eppner would say, you know, the longer he's in the air, the happier he is. You know, so that ended up working out, real nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I remember, so we were taking off out of here and it was like overcast at, was it 1300 feet or something like that, which is, that is VFR, you know, but, you know, it wasn't, you know, we're trying to go IFR, but the main thing that we were trying to figure it and combat against was ice.
Right.
Remember? So we were in a Cirrus SR20 that, what year is it?
It's 07.
07 Cirrus SR20. And taking off and, you know, ice was a concern of ours. But, you know, we talked about this on the previous night's show, the last Sunday's night show about the FAA's interpretation of ice. And how they actually became a little bit more liberal in their, you know, proceedings and interpretation of what is known ice. And we decided to take a look at that. And, you know, we knew that we were going to be going through the clouds. It was 1 or 2 degrees. Do you remember what the temperature was? It was like +1 or 2 on the surface here.
That sounds right.
Yes, +1 or 2 on the surface here. We were going to climb up to about 8,000 feet. But then you know, fly to Galesburg. Galesburg's weather was low overcast. It was like a mile and overcast at 300 feet. And the temperature dew point spread was, you know, very close. And there was a little, there was a, like a little low pressure system that was spinning some moisture just to the south, kind of like in the Springfield, Illinois area. And that was, you know, so that there was a lot of, the relative humidity was really high. So, what did we determine out of that?
Well, you know, that route that I wanted to take, and after you kind of pointed the weather out to me, and we kind of looked at some things, and you know, we had the potential, you know, of icing, if I remember correctly,
right, right.
And you know, so my concern was, well, okay, you know, what do we do here? And,
yeah,
and that was the whole deal about moving 50 miles further out. To take our trip where, you know, you can say, hey, you know, I wasn't going to go, and, you know, we ended up making it and just kind of skirting, you know, around it and that sort of thing, which was nice. And I think the way you explained the weather to me when we were at the Leading Edge Clubhouse and just going through everything that you have to look at, you know, I've called the briefer so many times in the past, and what ends up happening is you're almost scared to death to leave by the time you get done talking with these guys.
Exactly.
And, I mean, the picture that you actually put together for me on the weather and how we did our own thing, I mean, was really just, it was a lot more comforting.
Right.
You know, doing it that way, doing our own deal, and really taking a good look at it.
I thought so. I really enjoyed doing that. You know, every time we sit there and I go over it, I actually learn something too. You know, and it just kind of, it's nice to reaffirm looking at the weather and studying it and trying to explain and teach what happens. And we're not necessarily teaching the weather. I'm trying to transmit experience, if that makes any sense.
No,
we're not
I mean.
Talking about what a low pressure system does. We're thinking, okay, a little bit, trying to paint, you know, fill in the gaps in this picture a little bit. And, you know, transmit some experience so that you have a good working knowledge of what to expect up there.
Right.
Because we were going to fly, and we ended up having you know, some credible threats of ice and everything, but you know, the temperature was down in Galesburg, you know, 1 or 2 degrees above freezing, and then a high pressure system, a winter high pressure system, was pushing its way kind of from the northwest to the southeast. So remember what difference did making going 50 miles north do to us?
You know, going 50 miles north, I mean, the temperature change was different.
Yeah.
Obviously, it was freezing weather now.
Right, yeah.
And it was like, well, we're not going to get any ice. I mean, because everything's frozen. If anything, it just bounces off you and this and that.
Right.
I mean, these were things I didn't know that you spelled out to me.
Right.
And, you know, I would just say, wow, it's freezing out there. I'm not going to fly through that. And,
yeah.
And that's really not the case.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it used to not be the case where we could do that because until the FAA put this interpretation letter out, you know, they said, hey, if you're in the clouds and it's below freezing with visible moisture, bam, you can't do anything. And which was kind of bogus. Ice is a very no pun intended, isolated event.
Right.
And the one thing that I learned, you know, while flying around is that, you know, you have ice, and if it's cold enough, it's not going to adhere because it's already frozen.
Right.
It's when we got closer to Galesburg and closer to that moisture and that spin off from that rain, the atmosphere is juicy. You know, so we had a very credible threat of ice in Galesburg, and something that could exceed the capabilities of the airplane. But just by going a little bit further north, we got into much colder temperatures, and you know, that ice threat very quickly diminished.
Yeah, it was a non-event.
Right, absolutely. So that was pretty neat. And then so we talked about you know, weather plan. We spent a good time on that.
Yeah, I would say it had to be at least a good hour just on that portion alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we went into to actually planning cross countries, IFR cross countries.
Right.
And we started talking about you know, fuel requirements and things like that. And one thing I got to say was I learned as an instructor that, you know, drawing out a little map of what our fuel requirements are, how much fuel each leg is going to take, it was from my standpoint, I kind of had a little epiphany. It was like, aha, this is how you explain it. This is super easy. But it's hard to explain it by just going to, you know, to an airport 10 miles away to shoot approaches and back.
I like pictures.
I learned that about you on the trip.
Right.
Yeah, but, so that was good, you know, and all that. So we actually didn't take off for like 3 or 4 hours. By the time we were at the airport, we spent
I think I met you at 10, and I don't think we took off until, I don't know, it could have been 2 o'clock or something like that. Really, I'm not 100%. Well, maybe it was even later than that, I think.
Yeah, it was something like that. And but we finally got out of there, and what did we start working on right away?
You know, just basic attitude flying.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Is you know, the scans, and you know, we talked about when we planned out the IFR trip, you know, the Victor Airways, and kind of went through everything. You know, it's just kind of like when you start your private pilot's license and your certificate there, and you were just kind of going through the charts with your IFR charts. And call me crazy, I almost felt that the IFR charts were easier to read than the VFR charts.
Yeah,
it's just because it's like all the lines are drawn for you. You know, it's like you're playing connect the dots.
Right.
And which was really neat. And, you know, I kind of liked that a lot. And, you know, even after that first day you showed it to me and all these legs that we were doing, I'm just plugging stuff in and just pressing away. And how does this look? And you're following along with me. And, you know, it wasn't as difficult as I thought it was going to be, that aspect of it.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I thought it was great. It was a great connection and everything like that. Going back to the instructional standpoint, where we sit there and we actually take the charts and we have to explain it because we have to navigate, right?
Right.
You know, and how do we navigate? You know, VFR, we can just go point to point. IFR, it's a little bit different. We can't just do that. So it forces us to pull out the chart and bam.
But it's not as difficult as it sounds.
No, it's not.
You know, it's really, you know, I almost feel that it's easier, you know, because you have the MEAs, the minimum en route that you have to stay above, and you know, so you know, I feel like it's just you know, it's like the answers are all there for you.
Right.
You just kind of follow the rules.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just
that's all flying is. You just follow the rules and right.
Hey, you got to be above 8,000 feet. Okay, yeah. Great. You know, you're not going to hit anything.
Yeah, exactly. That is awesome. But yeah, I mean, that you know, it was interesting because I had never flown with you before, and then here we go. You know, we embark on this trip into, you know, ice and all that, and which that we didn't encounter, and you know, so if we were going to have a nice easy 1 hour leg from Palwaukee to Dubuque, and you know, it's just going to be dedicated to learning your scan, getting your scan down. But all of a sudden, you know, as we got out of the Chicago area, we got over to Rockford Approach. What happened?
God, there's so much that happened. I can't even remember. I remember we were above the clouds at some point in time. But what did happen over at Rockford? I can't even remember. What was it? Oh, the radar outages?
Yeah.
Was that it?
Yeah,
the radar
Chicago outage. Center
yeah.
radar outage.
Yeah, that's right. I remember now. That was like the first thing out of the box.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Comes back to me.
Yeah, so we had, you know, we're sitting there, and I'm trying to teach, okay, scan here, use the control performance method, and we go and take a look at this. You know, once you're in level cruise flight, just look at your altimeter and your attitude indicator and your heading indicator and, you know, occasionally glance at your airspeed and such. You know, avoid your vertical speed indicator and then, bam.
That's the one that bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
That vertical speed indicator. You know, some guys, they hear me tell the story that I almost feel like I fly better looking at the needles than I do looking at the glass panel. And that was something that you pointed out to me. What I was doing was I kept looking at that vertical speed indicator versus the tape. And, you know, I'm kind of chasing, you know, the altitude back and forth a little bit until I finally stopped focusing on that magenta square that goes back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's too sensitive for calm level flight. This thing is giving you not necessarily false information, but it's really giving you, it's doing you a disservice by, you know, being the shiny object just bouncing around
right.
in your scan. And it's just, you know, I say just ignore it in level flight. Rely on your altimeter. It does just, you know, better of a job for you.
Sure.
And all that. But, yeah, so we get this radar outage, right? So here we are. We're about 20 minutes into the flight, and we're just finally getting comfortable. We do this lean of peak, you know, learning how to lean the airplane out properly. Actually looking at the EGTs rather than just setting fuel flows and stuff like that. But, you know, we compared it to the fuel flow charts, and they're pretty accurate. But
yeah, they're pretty accurate, and, you know, I kind of like using that chart and just kind of set it and go. But, you know, you kind of gave me in-depth knowledge on really why to use the lean assist that's in the aircraft. And, you know, so I'm changing my mind again here, and that's how I'm going to do it. I'm not looking at the chart. I'm just going to use what I have in the plane.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah, so you have, so we did that. We're going. We're on Rockford Approach, and then, bam, we get this a reroute because of a radar outage.
Right.
And from my standpoint, sitting there as an instructor, I'm just like, man, you know, I want to spend time on just getting the scan down, but now we have to go into a reroute. Which taught me as an instructor, it's like, okay, hey, you know, here's a great learning opportunity. How many times do you get a radar outage somewhere? It's not very, well, it's more often than you think it is, radar maintenance or something like that. But, you know, for your first instrument lesson, no, you don't get that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it was good. We kind of put the scan on the back burner for the moment and then said, hey, look, let's take a look at this reroute. This is what we have to do. You know, how do we get back and forth on this? And then we start programming it in there and talking about what to do in a non-radar environment.
Right.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. So as we're flying along, you know, they put us on, what was our route they put us on was direct to the Rockford VOR, Victor 100 to the Dubuque VOR. And from there, we had to basically just go and shoot an approach.
Right.
Right. So what do you remember what approach we shot?
In Dubuque, was that the ILS 36, if I remember? Or I got to look it up here.
Yeah, it was ILS runway 36.
Yeah, that's what it was. I'm looking at my notes, and I think that's what we did, yeah.
Yeah, ILS runway 36, but the controller just said, okay, you're cleared to the Dubuque VOR and cleared for the ILS 36 approach.
Right.
And so now we have to go into this thing. You kept referring to it throughout the whole trip. That turn, that procedure turn, that's all you train for in your training. If you just go out to a local airport and do it approach and back.
Well, you know, you hear about that all the time. That everybody always goes out and shooting approaches and the one thing about that's fine, and you have to know it, you have to learn it, and like you said, that's one thing that we have to concentrate that we're back now, is, you know, got to take the written and really got to get the approaches down, and that sort of thing. But I just, you know, now that we've taken this trip and we fly these really long legs on these Victor Airways between the VORs, and then you go do these approaches, and you know, you really have a lot of time to get set up,
right?
Which is the beauty of this type of learning, I think. I mean, you know, you can really be relaxed, as opposed to if you take off out of Chicago Executive and you go to Burlington, and you know, you're 50 miles away from some place, and you just, I think you feel stressed about
right.
trying to get set up, especially if you're brand new to trying to do this,
right?
And or you know, let's say you even go to Kenosha. I mean, if you're just starting out and you're going there, I just don't think there's enough time between this airport and that airport to set yourself up correctly and feel comfortable about what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. I think that there's a, you know, especially starting off, you know, 30 miles, you know, from an instruction standpoint, you know, if I go out, you know, it's saying, I feel bad when I do that. It's like, okay, you got to set up the approach, do this, do your scan, learn a scan, do your approach, just set up a hold. You know, get the ATIS, blah, blah. You start firing this stuff off. It's just, it's a real kick in the pants.
And as opposed to what we were doing, you're up there, you know, we have a one-hour leg in between where we're going to be, and I have all this time to think about it.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, I set up the boxes. I have everything that I need in front of me. We take a look at the chart. We kind of brief it. We go through it, and it's real nice. It's just slow. It's calm. It's easy. And it just really makes it fun.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to being stressed out trying to get it all done within 30 miles when you're doing it 75 or 100 miles out. And, you know, and you just go through your checklist, your alarms checklist that you gave me, and you go through it again. And,
yeah.
you know, you get a little closer. And it just makes it really easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I thought that we had we did a pretty good job, you know, on that leg. We shot a full approach via procedure turn, you know, because we had to. We come back. We shot an ILS and landed out of it, and that was awesome. I sat there. I'm like, man, you know, what a heck of a leg for that first leg. You know, for your first instrument lesson, and especially if we hadn't flown together before. You know, I thought that
right.
was like, I immediately as soon as we got down, I'm like, yeah, this is the benefit of doing trips like these.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then so anyway, we go out. We're sitting in Dubuque, and. You know, we spent some time on the ground flight planning again, right?
Right.
And we talked about fuel and all that. You know, I thought I'd like this because when we were in Dubuque talking about fuel, we were just going to fuel to some arbitrary number, but we had to double check. You know, I could see a definite shift from VFR to IFR flying now. You know, you had to do some IFR planning and take account of all the IFR regulations, and that was kind of neat, you know, and I think you drew out a little map that, you know, close to one that I drew out on our first leg, and you really start to calculate the fuel.
Right. No, I mean, you have to, and I mean, obviously, it's part of the deal. Like I said, just following the rules, and, you know, it worked out real well. You know, the only thing the issues that we had with fuel was just, you know, we have 807 pounds useful load.
Right.
And, I mean, I think basically everywhere we stopped to land and take off, we were always at gross.
Yeah. Are you calling me fat?
No, just a little thick. Okay, I'm thick.
I'm thicker.
Yeah. Thicker. Yeah, so it's but again, I'll blame the plane.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah, so it was, you know, the route planning was, like I said, this is a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
Right. Yeah. No, it was, and it was good. It was in a practical way, and all that. So, you know, while we were taking off of, you know, out of Dubuque, we went to the Kansas City Downtown Airport, which is a great airport, by the way.
Right. It was awesome.
Real great airport. It's, you know, it's friendly, it's scenic, and all that. But we have some distance to cover from Dubuque to Kansas City.
Right.
So we ended up going. You know, we talked about the route planning and everything like that. But you remember what one thing that was a little bit different about the route going into Kansas City? What they did to us? They put us on a star.
Oh, yeah, the star.
Yeah, they put us on a star, and which is a standard arrival into the Kansas City area. It was the Braemar 4.
Yeah, I remember we spent some time on that one there.
Yeah, we pulled the chart out, and it's actually good. You know, we talked about, you know, a lot of guys, remember in the remarks section of these flight plans, guys go out and they say, you know, no departure procedures or no stars. And it's like, you know what? No, I would do them. You know, I would love to do the stars, because then that's exactly what they're going to make me do anyway. And, you know, and if I say that, they're just going to keep vectoring me. So every 2 or 3 minutes, they're going to give me this new vector. And, you know, it's going to get annoying talking to them, listening to the ATIS and setting up. You know, so just sit, you know, set yourself up on the star and, you know, just fly it, because, heck, you know what? That's they're not that difficult. And that helps air traffic control out, and then it's ultimately helping you out because it's cutting down the radio chatter to you.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yeah, it was awesome. So
that was another thing that you said, hey, here's another one to check off the list.
Yeah, exactly. No, I thought that was awesome. But as we call, the nice thing about this is that we had a time to rebound from our reroute and our full ILS approach into Dubuque. On, we had a time to rebound on this leg to Kansas City, and we could get back with our scan, really develop that, and you know, because that leg, how long was that? Like that was about like 3 hours or something like that.
Yeah, I want to say it was around 300 miles or so. But yeah, I think that was about right.
Yeah, 300 miles, and we ended up going. You developed your scan. We had a lot of this in route time, you know, and you add simple tasks of navigation and VOR navigation along in it, and it wasn't. You know, I think that you were playing around with it. You know, it's a scan is kind of difficult, and it's different for each person. But I think you finally caught on.
No, absolutely, it was good. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, we didn't really use the autopilot on the trip until we did some night flying through the mountains that one time. But it was just, you know, I mean, we flew freehand from, you know, Chicago Executive all the way to Dalhart, Texas.
Yeah,
and which is good, and so really, you know, learning to trim out the plane correctly, and you know, to the point to like where you basically flying it with no hands. I mean, obviously, you know, there's some tricks that you taught me and that sort of thing that were nice, and then even just using the rudders a little bit just for a small adjustment, and you know, every time I made a move, if I had to do something, let go of the yoke, you know, so you don't you know, turn the plane to the left or to the right or whatever the case may be, and it was really, really worked out nice. And but yeah, once you get that plane trimmed out, like you call it, the poor man's autopilot.
Yeah,
you know, it was by the end of the trip on the way home, I was already feeling that way. Forget about that autopilot.
Yeah, exactly. I know you were like all giddy and whatnot on the the last leg. You're like, you know, what would the clean version be? Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's probably the clean version.
No, but it was good. No, I think that you really nailed that part. But it was good because you were actually, you know, on the way down there, practicing your scan. There's a couple times where we were in a, you know, 90 degrees from our course, you know, because adding these little tasks and added things of management and navigation and communication, and you know, it's difficult to manage all that. You have your instrument scan, but then you have to do a task. Remember, we kept going task scan,
right? Just small little moves, just, you know, move one dial, look back, go back, move the other dial, you know, go back, press your button, move back. I mean, just really, you know, don't rush anything. I mean, we have plenty of time.
Right, absolutely. That was wonderful. So we ended up doing that, and that was nice. But we were in some actual on that leg.
A couple hours, actually. Snowing.
Yeah, it was snowing. It was great.
Couldn't believe it.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. So we had the, you said you hadn't seen the movie Spaceball. Or did you say,
No, I didn't see it.
Yeah, how do you call yourself American?
I don't watch too much TV.
No, but you go, so on Spaceballs where they say, we've gone plaid. There's a point where like the whole screen, all the stars rush by, and it makes this plaid configuration, you know, this like color pattern. But that's how the snow going by you at night seems like. It's just like these streaks.
No, it was I never seen it before. Obviously, I never been in that.
Right.
And it was the first time for me, and that was pretty cool. I mean, I felt very comfortable because I was with you.
Yeah.
So. Figure I'm all right.
And I'm sitting over there sitting on pins and needles. Yeah. Absolutely. But no, that was good. That was a really good a good light, because I think you really played with the scan, got it down, and you had the time. We had the time.
That's the whole thing about this whole trip, about you have the time to do everything you need to do.
Right, absolutely. So we go in there, and we get closer to Kansas City. We're on this arrival, the Bramer 4, and the transition to the runway 19 at the downtown airport. And we go in, and we shot an approach.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. There was just so much. You have a better memory about it than I do.
Yeah, it was the ILS 19.
Right. Yeah, the ILS 19. And the only thing was with that airport was, man, I mean, people talk about Chicago Executive. You can't find this place at night. I couldn't find that place at night.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, it was tough. That place was tough.
That was tough to find. I mean, you know it's there.
Yeah.
But it almost looks like the place, the lights are on super low.
Yeah.
I guess I should have told him to turn them up, please.
Yeah, exactly. You're just sitting there, and you're just like, what am I looking at? But, no, we shot an approach. That was another ILS approach, and that was good.
Right.
And all that. But, you know, that was good. That was a good stopping point. We covered a lot of material, and we spent the night in Kansas City. But that was our first, you know, our first overnight interaction with an FBO.
Right.
And you can see, man, it's really nice to, these services these FBOs provide are really nice. They book hotel rooms for you. They bring you water, you know, when you land, and they just really take care of you. Give you rides to the hotels.
It's easy.
Yeah, it is easy. They make it really easy so that when you're pooped, you just show up and you leave, and then they take care of the rest.
Right.
It's awesome. Yeah, so nice work to the Signature at downtown airport. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So the next day we come back to the airport, and we head from Kansas City to, I love this, the hut.
The hut.
Yeah, we're going to the hut.
That's what it is. It's the hut.
Yeah, we go to hut, and because we realized we couldn't take we were doing our fuel calculation. We were originally going to go to DHT, Delhart, Texas, Kansas
right.
City, Delhart, but we found that, you know, we just can't make it with the headwinds and everything in there. The amount of fuel that we could onboard.
We had to make that extra stop.
Right. So and I'm glad we did.
And you know, so did I, because that pot roast.
Pot roast was like out of this world.
It was great.
Yeah,
I go back for that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you know what? It wasn't pot. It was the prime rib.
No, it was prime. Yeah, not prime. I thought
prime
it was
rib,
prime rib. What is that?
Pot pie.
Prime rib pot pie.
Man, it was awesome.
Pot roast pot pie. Was
exactly. Prime so pie. Sam's over here is like giggling. You know, we had that similar thing at the Schaumburg. We got to fly over. You know, maybe we'll have the pre radio show dinner there
right.
next week or something like that. But no, it's good. So we go out. We fly to Hutchinson, Kansas, and on that leg between Kansas City and Hutchinson, you know, I think you did a great job of refining your scan. And you started. I think that was the leg where you really understood and nailed your, flying Victor Airways.
Right. No, it just kept getting easier the more you did it, and you know, the more you practice, the more you go. Like I said, the fact that we were just able to constantly just keep going forward, plowing forward, and just doing this every single day, it just really, you know, the learning process just makes it that much easier, I think, for you. Going forward. And, you know, by the end of the, like I said, by the end of the trip, I mean, it's just, you know, it seems so easy. It's
yeah.
not even funny.
Oh, it's awesome. Absolutely. So you have a, it definitely coming back, I think it made it, you know, things were so easy because, you know, you could see that my responsibility, you know, for the first couple legs of the trip, I was there with you planning the route out. The second part, the trip, you know, let's break it down into thirds here. So the second third, it was, okay, take a look at your route, and then let's talk, you know, look at that, tell me what you want to do, and we'll talk about it. And then, towards the end, you were just doing it on your own.
Right.
You know, and that was kind of cool. But, yeah, that leg was really cool, where you just ended up nailing your IFR charts down and everything like that, got your scan. We were able to talk a little bit more about the alarms checklist that I like to introduce.
Right.
We ended up shooting a GPS approach with a circle to land to runway 35 at Hutchinson.
Right.
Which I don't know what's in Hutchinson. Do you know what's in Hutchinson? It's such a big airport. It's a towered airport.
I don't know what it is. I couldn't. I just gas is all I wanted. And yeah. Food.
And is it fair for a man to pump another man's gas?
You know, there's a guy in the radio that can answer that question.
Are
you for
serious?
You. Yeah. It's the question I ask him all the time.
You know what? He needs to tweet in or email us and figure that one out. Yeah, Sam, you need to tweet in or Facebook your answer to that question and all that. But yeah. So that was great. We landed there, and we had the pot roast, the prime rib pot pie, which was delicious. And then there was that's the leg where we started the M word.
Trying to remember which one that is.
The M word. For every time I said...
Oh, Malibu.
Yes.
Yeah, when we kept talking about what type of plane you want for your mission. And, you know, I was saying, to be honest, you know, not saying if I got a dollar for every time you said that, but if I got $100 for every time you said the word Malibu, you definitely have the down payment for the plane.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be awesome.
Right.
But yeah, they have a big... Hutchinson, Kansas, they have, like, the premier Malibu maintenance facility. That's why we saw all these Malibus out there.
Oh, yeah, up on the ramp there, okay.
Yeah, right. So that's where it all started, but we'll get into that later.
Didn't know that was their deal.
Yeah, right. So anything else on that leg that kind of stood out to you?
You know, that's where when you introduced the alarms checklist to me.
Yeah.
You know, we were going through it, which was nice, which was kind of, you know, taking a look at the ATIS, you know, your landing, your approach, your radios, if they're all, you know, if you got all the boxes filled in, and, you know, the missed approach set up, and, you know, if you're set to go. So that was really kind of neat stuff. And, you know, so I really, you know, I really like using that checklist, and, Just another tool just to keep remembering, you know, what you need to do. And again, like I said, when you're flying along and you're 75 or 100 miles out, you got a lot of time to think about everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was good.
Yeah,
it was
absolutely. Good.
So that was kind of all clicking in and just kind of getting together with that. And it was nice.
Yeah, definitely. I thought so.
Right.
So then that's the point where the sun was starting to go down. We had this little GoPro that we mounted in the airplane. And we got a nice video of the sun, you know, the flying into the sunset and stuff like that. It was good.
That was a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a, where did we go after? Yeah, so we went from to...
We went from Hutchinson to Delhart.
Delhart, Texas.
Am I pronouncing
that right?
DHT, which she asked me, well, how did you end up picking up that airport? And I don't know, it's just the closest one along the route there, but Amarillo would have been your choice. And
yeah,
it was Amarillo on the way home, because at Delhart, Texas, that was kind of we couldn't even find the gas for the first 30 minutes.
No, we were on the ground. I was walking around with a police LED flashlight, you know, trying to figure out, there's like 18, you know, there might have been 1,000 gas pumps on this field, and none of them took a credit card. And then you found the sign to call, and then the guy gave you a hot tip on where the self-serve fuel was.
Yeah, make a left, right, straight forward, you know, and turn. It was a joke.
Yeah, but it was find the Cessna sign, which was a faded painted Cessna sign in the middle, you know, pitch black on a hangar door.
Right.
Make a right and find the light, you know.
Right. Not exactly right.
Yeah, so that was good. But, you know, we ended up there. I filmed the spark reel video there, you know, and we were getting gas. It was pretty comical, you know, and in the background they had this, it was like right next to this, the airport was right next to this prison. And
oh, yeah,
you remember
right.
that? It was
yeah.
just like little hum of the fans and stuff like that. And you're just like, nobody's out here. And it was just like windy. You know, we saw the TAF right before you came in. You looked up the TAF on the next rad, and you went like, oh my gosh, what is that? You know, and it had like gusting to 50 knots with blowing dust and
for the next day.
So it was just kind of this weird, eerie feeling knowing that, you know, this next leg we're going into the mountains. It was nighttime and all that. So I don't know. It was definitely not necessarily, you know, nerve wracking, but it was just like, you're like, ah, let's mind our P's and Q's here, you know. So anyway, we go out and we land at Dalhart. We shoot a GPS approach via procedure turn there. We cancel in the air with Albuquerque Center, and we get our gas. And I filmed a video for Spark Reel, as I mentioned, and not just to help, you know, keep track of where we're at for the people that were watching us along on Spark Reel, but also just in case,
right,
you know, some massacre or guy with a chainsaw came out and got us.
That looked like the place it could have happened.
Yeah, that would have been.
Yeah, right.
But that's all right.
Yeah, then from Dalhart, we went over to Albuquerque, which that was, you know, that was the part of the lake that was going to be the interesting one. You know, it's nighttime.
Yeah.
You know, if you really thought that you wanted to spend the night there, that's my own fault, landing in Dalhart versus Amarillo. You know, we could have got somewhere, but there was just nothing there.
Right.
And, you know, so it's just like, okay, let's just get out of here. You know, we'll plow through to Albuquerque. And, you know, that was, you know, now we get into the point where, you know, the field elevation over there, I think was probably around, don't quote me, but I don't know if it was over 4,000, maybe 4,300 or something, or 4,800. I would have to look at the chart and see. But, you know, this is where the big drain came in on the performance of the aircraft.
Yeah.
And it kind of really makes you say, okay, you know, is this the right plane? And, we pulled out the performance charts and took a look at some things and, you know, how much are we, you know, at gross again, you know, how much can we, how fast can we climb out? And I think we were probably, I'm not sure exactly what we were doing, but it might have been somewhere between 300 to 400 feet a minute without
right.
looking it up. And, you know, you're going to go through the terrain and, you know, 300 to 400 feet a minute, and it's, you know, it's a little unnerving. And it's just black outside. Can't
yeah.
see anything. And, you know, we're talking to each other. I was like, are we idiots? So here we go. You know, this was the best part of the trip, because now I was actually able to have the autopilot on. And, you know, we just figured that'd probably be the safest thing to do, you know, going that way. But, you know, once you got into that, you know, that elevation out there, you know, you really felt the toll that it has on the aircraft. And, you know, we did have, I think, about 40 knots on the nose there, and we were climbing out, got our ground speed. I took a picture of it, and it's on FlightAware too. I think it was something like, we were just climbing out like at around 50 knots.
Yeah,
ground
we
speed.
Were.
And
yes.
then,
all the fuel remaining was showing like
minus 18 or something.
Yeah, negative 20 gallons.
Yeah, it was some crazy. And then once we finally got into cruise, I think we were always somewhere in the 90 knot range or something like that. We got over 100 a couple of times, but man, it was windy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think somebody had emailed me. I think Mark had emailed me. He goes, I think you guys are having a little problem just even keeping up with the cars. Is what he was saying. Yeah, but
I think we did too.
You know, but it was, you know, that was the part of the trip that I was curious about, that I wanted to do with you and kind of train, you know, for taking off in that type of environment. And, you know, that was, you know, that's an eye opener about what you're flying.
Yeah, absolutely.
There.
Yeah, that was kind of the point where we started. You know, the whole IFR segment was up until this point was in the Midwestern, you know, portion of the U.S. and you know, performance isn't an issue. But then we start taking off out of Dalhart, and like you said, you know, we get into these higher MEAs. We really have to start looking at all this. And you know, one thing I learned about the terrain down there is that, hey, you know, it's actually flat. It's just high flatlands. That's about it.
Right.
And, you know, people say, hey, there's not a lot of landing areas. Well, I beg to differ. You know, it's just like a 9,000-foot, you know, high desert. You know, that's really what it is.
That's what it was. And, you know, you're flying through it at night. And, I mean, you look at your chart. You know it's there.
Yeah.
You know, you're in your... You know what your MEA is, so you know you're okay,
right?
And then when you come back, when we work on our way back, and we look at it during the daytime, and we're
yeah.
just kind of laughing at each other. It's like, wow. I mean, you could have just, it was just flat.
Yeah.
You could just landed anywhere.
Yeah,
if you had to. But
yeah,
yeah.
No, the one thing that was kind of cool is that you ended up having a flying out there, you're like, you know, from that leg from Delhart to Albuquerque, you said, man, I'm just glad we have this parachute.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so glad we have the parachute, you know. And, you know, I guess that was a safety blanket. Yeah. It was at some point where I said, you know, you remember what I said? It was like, I wasn't, it doesn't really make me feel any safer.
Yeah.
You know, but then, but it was a good comfort level, you know, something for you, you know.
For me, it was. I mean, you know, you're out there, the terrain, you know, it's nighttime. I mean, we saw the pictures. It's black. You can't see anything. There's a guy in the club that makes the joke. What does he say? He says, if you're going down, he goes, you know, shut your landing light off, and then before you hit the ground, turn it on. If you don't like what you see, shut it off.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, so, yeah, so, you know, having the parachute with the Cirrus is comfortable. I mean, you know, it's just another, you know, it's another option that you have. You know, having to put it down, I guess what I'm saying is I hate to have that responsibility of having to put that down at nighttime without having that
right
device to use. Otherwise, if I didn't, I probably wouldn't be going through there the way that I did. Even though I know these motors, they, you know, they're very dependable and they give you a lot of advance warning if something is going to happen. But, you know, but it is comforting to know that you have that option if you need it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that's a that was a nice option, but you know, at this point I was going into a little unknown. You know, I knew that we had the aircraft performance and you know that we could satisfy the MEAs, and all we had to do at that point it was to keep the needles centered up.
Right.
And you know, and as we do that, we're guaranteed our terrain clearance and everything like that, right? And there was a couple tips and tricks that we kind of did. You know, radar coverage gets spotty in that area. The radio starts, getting fuzzy and stuff like that. So it almost feels like you're just going into this unknown abyss.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and especially, you know, it doesn't give you the warm and fuzzies you don't get your warm and fuzzies by just what am I trying to say here? You didn't get the warm and fuzzies going into this thing just because we have a parachute or something like that. But you know, we ended up monitoring the guard frequency 121.5, and we called flight watch and gave some pi reps and stuff like that. So it's actually it does a lot for your psyche knowing what. You know, that there's somebody out there that you can talk to.
Oh, absolutely.
And we actually, later on in the flight, we had an airliner relay a frequency change to us just because we were so low going out to Phoenix, but we'll get into that. And, you know, it's just a good practice to do.
Right, right.
So.
Yeah, it seemed like every time that we had on this trip, every time that we did report a pi rep or... It was always that ATC was coming back and talking to us at the same time that we were doing the pi rep. It was It was almost, I'm not going to say it was annoying, but it was just like I just can't believe you were batting 1,000 on that. And my some friends that won't believe that I just said that.
So batting 1,000.
I don't know anything about sports. That's why.
Wow.
I just know that's good.
That is good. You know, that's a that's all right. Maybe it's a figure of speech. Maybe that's because you were batting 1,000 with. It's not a sports term, it's an aviation term.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll go with that.
Oh, okay, great, yeah. Wow. But, so we get into Albuquerque that night. And it was nice to get there, you know?
Yeah, it was nice. It was a really nice landing. It's a great airport. I've been there once before, a couple years ago, when I was flying from Scottsdale to Albuquerque. I'd rented an SR-20 out of the Scottsdale airport there just to kind of take a look at this terrain. And, you know, going forward, we'll talk about the, you know, the trip that we had to make VFR. And that was the only leg that I knew out that way. And, you know, that was the really the only route that we were able to take.
Whoa. Uh-oh. We're getting a phone call.
Oh, okay.
From a listener. Can you believe it? I think it might be Mr. Rob Mark, your private pilot instructor. Let's talk to him.
Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
How's it going? Who is this?
It's a listener. Wow, there's a delay on here. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, exactly. So I would turn the radio off if you're trying to talk to us. There you go. Yeah.
Oh, okay, it's a secret caller. I have knowledge of the pilot that you're talking to, Al. Al Waterloo.
Oh, excellent. Can you yeah. expose some air some dirty laundry or something like that?
Is that a trick question?
No, it's it's legitimate. That's
my line. Is that a trick question?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, I am so pleased that you guys got to do what you got to do. I can't think of a better way to indoctrinate someone into the system in their own airplane than to go out and do what you guys did. And so I just think that's a it's such a great way. And the one thing I would tell you though, Alex, is that you know, you mentioned how good you felt by the time you got back after what did you tell me the other day? Well, people that are listening don't even know who I am, but I'm another LEFC member, but we were talking at the clubhouse about how good you felt, and that's why we try to get people to fly on instruments as often as they can, because at Waterloo, as you can attest, I mean, I can remember when I was flying for a living, I mean, I'd be gone for a week or 10 days and hop back into the left seat on an IFR day, and I'd tell the other person, you know, you better watch me, because you knew you were not near as sharp just after a week or 10 days out of the cockpit.
Right, right. No, it's, you know, that's totally a lot of truth to that. And, I mean, I was sitting at home this evening, and I was just like, wow, I can't wait to get back up in the air again, because I'm like, so scared that I'm going to lose the skill.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you, honestly, though, I mean, Al, Chris, I guess I should get this straight. I'll call Al. And Alex, because I could see where both people could refer to you as Al. But but Al, I think you probably saw it too. I think Alex is a pretty good pilot.
Oh, he
having
really
been
is.
The guy that signed him off for his private, I can attest to that. And
I
and,
must have I remember you on that he picked up some good skills from you. That was awesome.
Well, and that's because every time he did something bad, I whacked him with a big stick.
I still got the bruises.
He always would ask me, "Is that a trick question?" Yep.
But you know, actually, what helps is that Alex has a love of automobiles and machines, and he understands how things operate. And it seemed to me that it all kind of made sense in his brain. You know, you had to sometimes sit and think about it a little bit, but then you would go, "Oh, right, I got that."
Yeah.
And then I almost never had to tell him again. I don't think did I.
No, I don't think so. I think you know it clicks pretty quickly, and you know, it's just as long as I'm like I told you before, you know, this is kind of my hobby, and as long as I'm having fun doing something, it's great. I don't, you know, this is just what I like to do. So I mean, I just kind of that's all I kind of live and breathe it sometimes, and it's a little. I think I make some people crazy, to be quite honest with you, especially my family, but I can't help myself. And
well, now, is there any truth to the rumor that your car will move faster than your airplane?
You know, on this trip, there probably was some legs that the car definitely would move faster. I think I have the pictures and the videos to prove it, the guys. You know, so.
Yeah, we'll have to.
Well, I can't wait to see all the videos and things that you guys posted. I had a chance to see a little bit of them in the clubhouse yesterday, but I'm sure everybody will be after that on the Leading Edge Flying Club Facebook page or someplace else that I'm sure you guys will mention.
Yeah,
so I'll let you go back to your to the show. I just wanted to call in and say I'm really glad that you did have that opportunity, and it is the best way to learn actually whether you like flying IFR or not, because it's not the real world when you're out there playing around 10 miles from the airport with a plastic hood over your head.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Absolutely.
Well, you guys have a good show. Have a good Christmas. And we'll probably talk to you at our event in a couple of weeks. What are we calling that? The holiday party, I think?
Yeah, the little holiday party. Absolutely.
So yeah, I'll plan to buy the first round.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, hey, you're in luck. It's open bar.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, darned. Well, whatever. It was the thought that counts.
Excellent.
You guys have a good holiday, man. We'll see
you. All right. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
We'll see
you.
You know, he brings a good point up, and again, about instead of just playing 10 miles away from the airport, you know, it's just a totally different deal being out there, going somewhere, staying on this Victor Airway for 100 miles, doing your thing, reading the chart, you know, how they go from one VOR when you switch over to the next VOR, they
right.
start tracking that. And, you know, these are all things when I took a, you know, when I took a handful of lessons, you know, prior, you know, a while back before I started to get into it again, you know, these are all things that you just never do. Like I said, and I said it before, you know, you go out, you do approaches, but there's just so much more that's involved. And I think that's the scary part about, or maybe the people that think that that's the difficult part about IFR, that there's just so much stuff to learn. But if, for me, by doing it this way, it feels like you got the bulk of the stuff
yeah.
out of the way.
Yeah.
And you told me, okay, we got to go back. You got to do your written. You got to, you know, hammer out these approaches and get those down, you know, solid. And then, you know, you start studying for your check write and you're done. And I kind of laughed about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's it? You know, and that's the whole thing. It's like we almost did it the opposite way that you would normally do it if you're just practicing out of your home base,
right?
And you know, cruising around in the 50-mile radius.
Yeah, absolutely. You get that practice. You get the confidence that you can navigate. You know, this IFR system can get you across the country. You know, it's not just a you know, somewhere close by and back. It actually can get you all the way out to the coast if you wanted. You know,
right.
And that's kind of nice. That's a good feeling. I think another good feeling is that on that leg from Delhart to Albuquerque, you know, all we knew that we had to do is keep the needle centered, and we're going to be guaranteed our terrain clearance and everything like that. You know, and we were operating on thinner margins at that point, you know, just based on the aircraft performance. We couldn't climb to get, you know, a real good buffer above ourselves and things like that. But I think, I look back on that, that drilled a lot of confidence in this Victor Airways and in the IFR routing structure that,
right.
Hey, you know what, we can do this, we got to be sharp, we got to stay focused, and these are the things that the caller just talked about, you know, you got to stay sharp and focused on these things, and, you know, anytime you get away from that, it starts to degrade a little bit, you know, that's the stuff that really keeps you sharp and going. And allows you to keep that confidence, both your own and all that. Holy cow! Another caller.
Come on.
Do you know who it is?
I can't tell. You're not showing it.
Hey, look at that.
It's your guy.
Hey, let's get him on the phone. Domino's Pizza.
I'll take a sausage and cheese and a whole bunch of throwing a tomato and bacon.
All right. Well, that's we're out of the tomatoes got recalled. For
Salmonella. Okay, then I'll take sprouts.
Great. Well, hey, everybody, this is it's Mark Eppner on the phone. How you doing?
Hello, I'm doing fine. I'm sorry you missed the show, but not really, because I got to spend time with family tonight.
Yeah.
And I caught a little bit of the show, and I said, you know, the battery's running low. I better give them a call and make sure they're doing okay without me. You probably have lost all your listeners, I'm assuming.
It's like they trickled off like you can't believe. But hey,
you're talking about Alex's trip, right?
We're talking about the trip. We're you know, right on the leg between Delhart, Texas, and Albuquerque, New Mexico, and you know, we saw Santa, and unfortunately, on that leg, we saw Santa's beacon, and then it just turned off. We were thinking that might the FAA might have killed the engine at that point when that beacon just.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
Yeah. Yikes. No, but
yikes, yeah. Well, but I'm sure the presents, I don't want anyone to, like, worry they're not going to get the presents on Monday night for Tuesday morning open up. So no one freak out. It's going to be okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, great. Well, excellent. We're missing you on the show tonight. Absolutely. And
I know you guys are doing well. And I just want to say, you know, and I truly have not been on the show because of family reasons or listening. But what you guys did was awesome, and I think we should do more of that, regardless if we're going for instrument training. It's just for good flight training and having a blast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think, you know, you make a good point. I mean, not even just for instrument training. I even think for someone that's even interested in getting their private pilot's license, a trip like this would actually be pretty good. Be pretty good as well. I mean, you know, I don't think there's any difference in the way the learning goes. I mean, if you want to do your IFR, I think this is a great way to do it. I think even your private's a great way to do it. I mean, you just immerse yourself. I mean, you have these aviation schools at these colleges and these universities, I should say, where you know, that's what they do. You know, you hear your stories where you talk to guys and you have some hangar talk, and you're just like, you know, so and so's daughter soloed in 14 hours. Well, there's a reason why she soloed in 14 hours.
Yeah,
she's doing it every single day. You know, she's not coming out, you know, once a week for 2 hours, you know, to practice a little bit, and then it takes them 2 months or 3 months or 4 months before they get signed off and say, okay, you know, go to town. I mean, really, if again, like I said, if you can divorce yourself from society and just give yourself just 1 week, just a week, you know, you're going to be able to get something great accomplished.
Right, but and you mentioned not only for the instrument, but for the private, but I'm saying even for those of us that have those two ratings, and whether we're going on for another one or not, I just think it's a wonderful experience. And I have to admit, you know, I get stuck in the $100 hamburgers, or I go out and see family, so I'm always flying to Iowa City, Cedar Rapids. I haven't done something like you did, and I think it would be an excellent learning experience, regardless of going for a rating or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be there's a lot of opportunity just to learn and brush up on stuff. You know, even just imagine if you had people in the back seat on our trip.
Right.
You know, that'd be pretty effective for the person in the back seat. You know,
definitely had the wrong plane.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and if you land every couple hours and just kind of rotate, no one will get overtired from a focusing in as the PIC, but yet you fly all day long.
Right.
And you know, you're shooting approaches every 2 hours or not, or if we're flying over a mountain that you don't get to do in the Midwest a lot. I just think it goes down as one of those things that should be on your aviation bucket list.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's great. I think that should be on everybody's bucket list. And we need to maybe we could try to organize something with some listeners. We all, listeners of the show that are in different parts of the country, and we all fly to, I don't know, Mount Rushmore. And
You know what? I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we need to do it. Maybe we'll announce something in 2000. That would be a New Year's revolution for Simple Flight Radio to organize a flyout to Mount Rushmore.
I'll go.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go to CRAP, right? That's Rapid City.
Yeah.
My other bucket list item that would be that sort is to go up into Wyoming and see Devil's Tower. Just do a flyby.
That's not too far from there.
Right, once you're to that part of the country, I wouldn't think so. But, you know, I haven't mapped it out, but I think that would just be an awesome trip. So,
yeah.
2013, let's make it happen.
Absolutely. You literally cannot, it's really not that much farther beyond Rapid City.
Let's have you flown there by chance?
I have a picture of Devil's Tower, yeah, from the air. But it wasn't low. It was from an airliner at 35,000 feet.
That doesn't count. That sucks.
Yeah, you're right. It really was horrible. It really sucked. It was the worst. It was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to take up the show, but I was thinking about you guys, and I will, with what battery I have left now, listen to the rest of the show and hear some of the stories that I have yet to hear about your trip out west.
Oh, thanks for the call, Mark.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
All right.
Merry
thanks,
Christmas,
Mark.
Everybody listening.
Yeah. Right. Happy holidays. All right. We'll see ya.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Excellent. Yeah, so it seems like there's some pretty good feedback on what we did.
No, it's and he's right. I mean, it doesn't have to be just for a rating. I mean, even just for a group of guys to get out and just go somewhere, and you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of time. I mean, just pick a place, like you said, have somebody sit in the back seat,
right?
Three guys rotate PIC, just move around, and it's just really it's a really great way to stay sharp. Like I said, that's the whole big thing is going to like some destination airport that you've never been to before.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, that happened to us in Albuquerque when we're flying through the mountains at night.
Yeah.
We're 10,000. Let me see, what were we on the way out there? We were 10,000. Yeah, we were 10,000. Yeah, we were 10,000 feet on the way.
Which was exactly the MEA.
Yeah, which was exactly the MEA. So we were able to do that. And the whole thing was, okay, I'm going to an airport I don't know.
Right.
I got to come down. I mean, they're they're bringing me down anyway. But the whole thing is, it's just like, okay, by the time I get there, you know, my traffic pattern, where do I have to be, how far away, you know, so these are just all things that you're just not accustomed to. So it's just something that gets thrown at you that you just have to, you know, deal with it and, you know, utilize the tools that you have in the aircraft, you know, to get the job done.
Yeah.
As opposed to out here, you know, where we all fly around these local airports, you know, you can almost do it with your eyes closed.
Yeah, right. You really can, and memorize the frequencies and things like that. You know, where this was actually really nice for me, where, you know, you had to use the, you and I had iPads, and we were messing around with those, and we had different programs and everything, but you know, it really forces you, it solidified how awesome of a tool the iPad was, you know, because it has your charts, it has FBO information, it has fuel prices, it has, you know, FBO hours, you know.
Right.
We're landing at all these places at 10:30 at night, you know, and when we went to Delhart, the place is closed and self-serve fuel, but, you know, we had the confidence going to Albuquerque, hey, this place opened 24 hours.
Right. No, exactly, and that's what we needed, because we were spending the night.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we ended up spending two nights in Albuquerque, and this is probably one of my favorite parts of the trip. Even though we didn't fly, and when we got to Albuquerque, it was a long day. You know, we were really relieved to be on the ground. You know, there's this whole, you know, we're kind of on edge a little bit. You know, I'll be honest, I was too, just to make sure that we were doing everything exactly right, so, you know, that we didn't stray off into any foreign terrain or anything like that.
Right.
But when we got over the mountain pass, descended into Albuquerque, it was great. You know, you got a great video of it, too.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was. So we go in, and we land, and then the next day we wake up, and
the wind is just howling.
Yeah.
So we leave the hotel, and we go to the FBO, and, you know, they drop us off. You get out, you do your thing, and I remember the flagpoles were just rattling like crazy.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay. And this is what we were looking at, the weather the day before, when I was just like, geez, look at this stuff. You know what I mean? And the idea is, are you going to get out early enough, you know, to beat it? And, you know, we're not there. So,
right.
You know, we have breakfast. You know, we're doing some groundwork and just going through weather and charts and talking about the flight plan and filing and doing what you're supposed to do. And we get out to the airport, and, you know, the one thing that I learned with us on the whole trip, if I say we're going to take off at 12, we take off at 1. So any time that I put on there, I just automatically add an hour to it. And so we get out to the airport, and, you know, we're trying to figure out, you know, how to get out of there. And, I mean, there were other planes that were, I think those rescue guys and the lifeguard guys. I mean, nobody was taking off. We were just all hanging out there. And, you know, so we just kind of, you know, went into pilot's lounge and just kind of hung out for a while, did some work. And, you know, the wind eventually, you know, slowed down. I think we got to about gust about 25 knots or 32 or something like
that.
And then maybe when we was 32, then the 25. But what happened was the darkness started to set in.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're still there waiting there all day. And, you know, we did file, but we couldn't do the route that I wanted to do from Albuquerque, New Mexico to Falcon Field over the St. John's VOR. And the reason for that was because the MEA on that, I believe, was 13,000.
Yeah, 13,000.
Which means we would have to go 14,000, and we couldn't do that in my aircraft because we don't have oxygen on there.
Yeah.
So,
and I think that was looking at the performance, that was, it was iffy if we were even going to be able to get up to 14,000.
Right, and that was the part. That was the part that I've only flown before on the west,
right,
side of the country here, and that was when I wanted to see what that terrain looked like a few years ago when I rented that SR-20. I told you, from Scottsdale, flew to Albuquerque and back. So now, you know, ATC did give us a route that evening if we wanted to go, I think, a little bit further up to the north. You know, pretty close to Flagstaff, I think, and then our way back down. The only problem was that, you know, we didn't have enough, the route that they gave us, I think, added another 75 or 90 miles on it, if I remember correctly, and we didn't really have the fuel. We couldn't bring the fuel. We didn't have the fuel requirement that we needed to take that trip.
Yeah.
Although the MEA was low enough that we could have did it safely, we just couldn't bring the fuel with us.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, so now, you know, it's nighttime. You know, we can do the route that I know VFR, but that terrain is a lot higher than the terrain that we had from Texas to Albuquerque.
Right.
That terrain is, you know, a couple thousand feet higher. There's going to be some spots where we're only 1,500 feet to 2,000 feet away from that terrain. Now I'm not comfortable doing that at night.
Right.
Over there, especially with the way the wind was howling.
Not at all.
We're going to get bounced around like crazy. You know, and I said to myself, I said to you, you know, I don't want to get messed up here. And that's the clean version of what I said. So the decision was made to, you know, let's just, you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to rush to get to the house in Arizona only to sleep there when I can just go there tomorrow morning.
Right.
And do the same thing. So, you know, we ended up scrapping it. We go back to the, you know, back to the hotel and we spend another night there. And we come back the next morning, you know, after breakfast, all refreshed. And, man, it was just a beautiful day.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, I mean, there wasn't, I mean, there was just nothing going on.
Yeah,
it was
there's hardly any wind. There's like 4 knots of wind.
Right, 4 knots. Yeah, something, it was just, it was nothing. It was really an easy, it was like an easy, it was going to be like an easy deal now.
Right.
So, you know, what happened was when, you know, when we started flight planning that trip, and we look at the MEAs and we were going to take off. We actually set something up where, you know, we wanted to do a holdover the VOR, the Albuquerque VOR, because
right.
of the, because of the density altitude again. And, you know, where I needed to be, they wanted me up at 10,000 feet probably within the first, you know, after 10 minutes. And, yeah, I just wasn't sure if I was going to make it up there in time. I mean, we look, I mean, it's kind of iffy.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you
right,
know, we
exactly.
did the whole thing where, you know, it was 12 miles away from the VOR. I have to be at this altitude. So, you know, we said, okay, we'll do a hold over the VOR and just do a couple of circles in the hold and, you know, stay in the hold, the pattern, I should say, for a little bit. Then, you know, gain 3,000-4,000 feet.
Right. Absolutely. No, I think that was an important aspect of that. You know, we look at departure procedures. We know that there's mountains. You know, all these things should be triggering us to say, hey, you know, looking at our air, we know that we don't have an aircraft. It's a great aircraft. It ran great, but it just doesn't have the performance to guarantee a normal departure out of the airport.
Right.
You know, so we had all these things, you know, hopefully we developed these triggers for us to start looking and looking into what we really needed to do. And we found the Albuquerque 2 departure. And that was an obstacle, you know, it was basically developed for obstacle clearance where you actually hold over the Albuquerque VOR.
Right.
And you climb in the hold, so you spiral up like a merry-go-round until you can get to your altitude, and then you carry on.
Right, right. And you know, that's what we had to deal with there. And but you know what, you know, it was fine. I mean, you know, they just say, hey, you know, you don't have to be here. We'll just vector you out this way, vector you that way, and you know, kind of skirt us around. And I think the explanation for that you told me was that you know, really, you know, they just don't want you circling around up above the airport.
Yeah,
they just kind of just shoot you in a straight line somewhere and then bring you back in and that sort of thing. And it worked out great, you know, so it was okay. I mean, the real treat over there at taking off at Albuquerque is I remember we're holding short and a Southwest Airlines is pointing right at you. You know, you look like a mosquito next to them. And then, you know, they take off and then all of a sudden you have these F-18 Hornets that are there. And, you know, one guy says, you know, we got to get going because we got to pick up the tanker. And I think I looked at you. I said, geez, man, I said, I can't miss this. So I think you got onto the tower and you said, 5 Alpha Kilo is going to need another minute here. And that was like gold in my ears. And, you know, so then we, you know, then they had these three guys light up and they take off and we were able to shoot the video on that. And the second set of Hornets that came through to take off, I mean, they really lit it up. I mean, we were just laughing in the plane because it was just shaking.
So I love the video because, you know, you start watching the video and then you see these Hornets take off, everything's shaking and rattling, and then I'm just sitting there like a little girl, you know, cackling, you know, it's like, ah.
Yeah, really, it was funny.
It was
like two kids.
It was awesome, but
it was awesome.
I want to go back to this whole Albuquerque bit real quick. But, you know, just before we even took off, the day that we sat and we analyzed, and we were looking for reasons, you know, we were assuming that the one thing that I liked about this is that when we went to the airport, we were assuming we were going to fly. We never approached any of these legs as the fact of, you know what, we're not going to fly, and now we're going to go to the airport and look for reasons to fly. When we went to the airport, we went with the intent that we were going to fly, and then we had to go and look at the weather again and defend that reason. And we couldn't defend it that day.
No.
No, we just couldn't. You know, everything was just stacking up against us.
I mean, we tried, and we waited all day.
Right, we did.
I mean, it was, I mean, the sun was setting, and it was just like, you know, there was going to be a window of opportunity. But the problem was, at that one point, you know, to do the route that I wanted to do, we just couldn't, I just wasn't comfortable doing it VFR.
Right.
It just wasn't going to happen. It's
no.
It was the wrong aircraft for that.
It was the wrong aircraft. We just couldn't, you know, just couldn't do it at the, it's unknown. You've done it before. I've never done it. VFR night in the mountains, you know, with howling winds. Just not, there's just something that's.
Now, when you say I've done it before, it was daytime.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know, but, so anyway, we're out there doing that. But when we got to the airport the next day, I want to touch on that feeling that we felt.
Oh, man, it was a joke.
Yeah.
I felt so giddy. I was just like, wow, it's like I'm going to have a great day today.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just thinking about if we had left the night before, how much work we would have had to be doing, you know, looking at each other like, each of us would be like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Yelling at each other.
Exactly. Yeah, so we were sitting there, and we had the autopilot on because we're too busy, like, looking around and taking pictures, just enjoying the scenery. It was just, that
right.
was just one of those, I was so looking forward to that flight. We knew that we were going VFR. It was going to be so relaxing. There's nothing between us. We actually called flight service on that one because, you know, there's a lot of restricted areas and stuff out there, you know.
Right.
That's a good time to, you know, to call them up, get the verbal briefing, so that way, if you're in something that you don't fly in very often, and if they miss something, it's their fault, and then if you bust something,
right,
so you can pin it on them. But you know, we called up the briefer, and they said, yeah, there's really nothing to talk about. You know, there's not even any wind.
Right. No, it was a great trip, and it was a great leg to take all the photographs and the pictures and the movies and.
Yeah.
That we took, and it was just really neat. And the funny thing was is that when, you know, the cell phone service, as spotty as it could be, that we actually, my hotspot was working. And so, I mean, you're sitting there tweeting everybody, and I'm sending pictures of guys that are even listening on the show, you know, of just the terrain that we're passing by and everything like that. And it was really neat.
It was awesome.
I was just like, you're playing, I got to do this.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was great. You know, but when we went to the airport that day, and we based on that whole experience that we had, you know, it just really just hits a home run that said, you know what, we made exactly the right decision.
Oh, there's no doubt, because like you said, I mean, we you know, how many different ways can you skin a cat? And we were looking at that the night before.
Yeah.
You know, can we get out of here? But again, you know, when I said I don't want to get messed up out there, and you know, you don't want to either, you know, we have the time. We don't have to go anywhere.
Right.
You know, there's no rush here.
Exactly.
And, you know, if the winds were the way they were, okay, they did come down 20 knots, roughly. But if it was daylight and extreme VFR, yeah, let's go do it.
Right.
You know, but the fact that it's night now and, you know, it's windy and that terrain's going to be much higher than what we went through the night before. And we can't do the route that ATC set up for us because we can't bring the fuel on board. And yeah, you can go up and land in Flagstaff or whatever the case may be. But like I told you, hey man, that's a big skiing town. They get 200 inches of snow over there.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, that's going to pose a whole other set of problems. You know, they'll tell you it's plowed, and then when you look at it, then you ask yourself, that's plowed.
Yeah.
You know, and but to them, it might be plowed.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
You know, so you know, we have to scrap that. You know, side of it, and like we said, we just go to bed, and we'll just do the VFR route tomorrow. That's the one that I've done. That's the one that I know, and you're going to love the way it looks. And it was really the right decision to do from the aspect of, you know, just being safe, and also from the photographs and the videos that we wanted to take. Because when we came back home and we went from Albuquerque to Delhart, that was just, that terrain was nothing.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just flat. There was nothing to look at.
Yeah, exactly.
So I didn't mind passing that at night after I saw that piece.
Yeah, exactly. We were sitting there and you're like, oh man, there's nothing. You know, it's just high desert. That's all it is.
Right.
High flatlands.
And I think that was that the leg of the trip. I think where we had to, since we were flying VFR, was that the one where we did the pop up for Teddy Intersection?
Yeah, yeah. We were trying to maintain some IFR flying on this leg,
right?
And we knew that, you know, if we took the northern route, we'd get a massive reroute. We just couldn't carry the fuel for it. But if we went IFR on the southern route from Albuquerque along Victor 190 over the St. John's VOR, we couldn't do that because the MEAs are 13,000 feet. You know, we need, at some point we have to start wearing oxygen, which we didn't have. So we actually had to do, it was a composite flight plan.
Right.
That's, I guess, the technical term about it. you know, saying that, hey, we're going to go VFR up to a certain point. And we went VFR for, you know, 80% of the flight, which was up till the Teddy intersection. The Teddy intersection, once we crossed that, the MEA started coming down.
Yeah, I don't quote me, but I think they might have been 9,000 maybe or something, or maybe even less. And if that's the case, I mean, we were, you know, higher than that, so we were fine at that point.
Yeah, right. So that's one technique that you know, I guess I didn't even realize, you know, we would even be practicing on this trip, where you file from a fix, where you go VFR halfway, and then you pick up your clearance. You know, and that's something that's very practical here in Chicago, because you have a lake. You also have O'Hare, you know, especially, which is a big obstacle for where we fly out of at Chicago Executive Airport. So it was such a realistic opportunity to practice that, you know, and this was just based on altitudes. And,
right.
You know, that same concept applies here in Chicago, and that's just for, you know, airspace obstacles like O'Hare and the lake.
Right.
Yeah, which was really good. But, you know, by the time we actually went through all the motions, but we never picked up the IFR because we had already been on approach. They cleared us through the Class Bravo airspace.
Right.
And then we just descended into the airport. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's when we were doing the, I think at that point in time, I think that's when you were showing me the VNAV, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
On the Garmins. And, which, you know, is a nice little tool. You know, it's something that I never, like I said, used out here. I know people do, but I never used it. Just because, you know, flying around locally over here, like I said, you can kind of do this with your, you know, you've done it so many times, you know, you just know the route and you know what you're doing. But again, like I said, if you're 10,000 feet somewhere and you want to get to the traffic pattern, you know, 2 miles out, that was just a great little tool that that you can use. It says, okay, it's 500 feet a minute to make it there, a mile and a half out. Power back. You know,
right.
Just like you said, just let the plane do the work for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just bring it down. It was really neat. You know, I'm going to use that all over the place now.
Yeah.
You know, just because it's a great tool.
Right. Quite often you get these crossing restrictions. It's cross, when we were coming back to Chicago, we knew, you know, that all the time they bring you in on the four corners of the airspace in the corner that we're coming in, Plano intersection, they always give you a crossing restriction.
Right.
You know, and this takes all the guesswork and the math out of it.
Which I figured why you taught me that on the way out there, because I did have to do it on the way back home.
Yeah.
which was cool.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so you kind of you get to mess around with it. Oh, I want to touch on one thing, another thing about flying over that St. John, from Albuquerque to Phoenix, Falcon Field. You know, we were looking at Victor 90 or Victor 190 between Albuquerque and Phoenix, and that was a great discussion to talk about the chart, the IFR
right.
charts, because they had basically anything that you could think about was covered in that one airway.
Right.
You had MEAs. You had to understand what each MEA was. You had a MEA. You had a GPS altitude, and then you also had a MOCA, which was the altitude of the star. And you know, then we also had compulsory reporting points. Do you remember what those were?
God, I'm trying to think here. You're talking about when we passed over the VOR at St. John's.
Yeah.
When they wanted me to report.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they lose us.
Yeah,
out there,
exactly.
And I think it was about, you know, ATC comes on and they just say, hey, Alpha Kilo, we're going to lose you here, you know, give us a call, you know, when you pass over the top of St. John's and
right.
let us know, you know, check in with us. And yeah, right, I remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we had compulsory radar points, so filled in, shaded in fixes.
Right.
And, you know, and we actually got to see why those are there, you know, because they do lose you on radar.
Right.
They can't pick you up, so no big deal.
No, it wasn't a big deal.
No, not a big deal at all. I think people get pretty nervous about that, but actually going out and practicing and seeing it, killing the myth.
Yeah. And again, a lot of time in between both places.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to do. A lot of real-world stuff, you know, versus being in the simulator, you know, for
right.
20 or 30 hours. And it's just like, you know, you just can't. It's just not going to get done that way.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so being really in the mix of it, you know, whether it was the weather when we had the snow, the radar outages, you know, guys putting us on the full approaches.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was just so much that was done. It was, I think the only way I can explain it, and I don't know if I'm saying this correctly because, you know, I'm just starting the IFR, but you know, had I been doing it, let's say, the more traditional way, I think you had explained it to me that, you know, there's so much stuff that happened to us on this trip that, you know, had I done this, let's say, the old-fashioned way back at home, you know, who knows how many months this would have took for all this stuff to happen to me.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to just happening, you know, in the 6 days, the 5 days that we were gone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's just kind of a, it's the odds are stacked against you that all this stuff would not have happened.
Right.
You know, and you go out and do this, and not, from an instructional standpoint, you know, I'm sold on this technique.
Oh, it's great. I mean, for me, like I said, it was perfect. You know, like I said, I can devote a little time, but I wouldn't have it any other way. And so I was always looking for something, like I told you.
Right.
That's the wrong equipment in that plane. That's not worth it financially me for you to take that other route because I need some prerequisite stuff done. You know, so hell, you know, I'll just make my own up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, when I give you a call, just say, hey, can you give me a week of your life?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, that's what I need.
Yeah. To go to Phoenix and back? Oh, absolutely. You
right.
know, and amidst the 50-knot snowstorm coming in here to Chicago? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I could squeeze you in.
Which I heard it missed us, didn't it?
Yeah. No, it missed us. It hit us. And it's whatnot. You know what? Actually, I got a good picture flying back from Kansas City to Palwaukee here. We had, I wanted to post a picture on Facebook on asking people if they could tell which way the wind was blowing because there's like these snow shadows from these houses. You know, the snow was whipping around, but, you know, there's like streaks of emptiness where, you know, the house would block all the snow, you know, in these fields and stuff. I gotta post that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pictures to post.
Yeah.
You're going to be pretty busy with that.
Yeah. Absolutely. A lot of videos to produce.
Yeah. And God, I can't tell you how many people tell me that they love the videos that you're making.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're just real motion picture stuff.
Absolutely. I got to just play this in the background because it's kind of cool. But we have this video in the background here. It sounds like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like... Here we are in the abyss, flying over the mountains at night.
Yeah, it was a good time. Definitely was a good time. I mean, I think it'd be great, you know, learning experience for anybody to do it this way. And you know, even like Mark Eppner said, I mean, just for guys that already have their rating, just to get out, just to stay sharp.
Yeah,
you know, going to some place that you don't know, that you're not familiar with,
right,
is really kind of a way to do it. You know, just. Kind of get out of the norm, I guess you can say.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I think that might be something that we have to do is work on a Simple Flight Radio, you know, get the listeners involved and meet at Mount Rushmore or something like that.
I don't see why not. I'll do it.
Yeah, you signed up. He said it right here, live on the air.
I'll do it. I'm almost game for anything.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. You know, so I think that, we should do some stuff like this. Just, you know, and stay sharp and proficient and see things and experience things.
Yeah, and the club has a great group of guys.
Yeah, we do.
You know, I mean, besides the planes that the club has, that they're great, and, you know, you have a number of other members that have their own aircraft, and, I mean, they just all love what they do.
Right.
And, you know, it's like you guys say, that, you know, everybody shares kind of a common bond. And it's just a great way to get together and get out and do things. I mean, you set up some trips and you've taken some people, and you know, everybody would share in the cost of that. I mean, it's not. Yeah. I tell people all the time. I was like, you know, I'll split it with you. Just give me a call.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, I'll go.
Absolutely.
And you know, I'm always willing to take that trip, even like when we went with our friend with the 310. You know, over to Mackinac Island. I mean, you know, it's 50 minutes there. It's an hour 10 back.
Right.
I mean, it's you know, over the lake, it's kind of a joke.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And people want to talk about the cost in aviation. Yeah, it's expensive. It's not cheap. There's no free lunch.
Right.
But when you split the cost with somebody to take a trip like that, you know, it becomes affordable. It actually almost makes economic sense. I mean, think about it. If you go to Mackinac Island on a weekend, you got to spend a two-night hotel stay somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Is what you have to do. And, you know, because you can't get anything just for the night.
Right.
So what is that hotel room going to cost you for two nights?
Right.
Right? Now you got to drive 7 hours there and 7 hours back, burn all that gas. You got to take a ferry. I mean, it becomes, you know, we left in the morning. We left at 7 o'clock at night, you know, because you rent the bike. I did for a little while. It turns into a punkin at 7, so you got to bring it back, and then you head back home. And it's just like it was easy. You know, you go back and you sleep in your own bed.
Yeah, no, I think you said it nicely on the trip. You said, "What are you going to do it for? Bikes, fudge?"
Yeah, oh yeah, carriages. Yeah. Yeah, it's besides the horses. I mean, we all know that it's fudge shops, sweatshops, and bicycles. I mean, that's what it was. And if you know, it's okay. You know, it's good. You know, I go see it. This is the way to do it. I mean, I think if somebody, you know, people go out there, they go golfing, or you know, they have weddings there and stuff. You know, you have a destination, you go there, and it's great. But you know, you have to think about what you're looking for. I mean, somebody may go out there and say, "God, I can't believe I came all the way out here for these three things."
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And then turn around, go back, and be all upset about it. But you know, so it's you know, you kind of got to think about, you know, where you're going, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but that's a nice way to do it. You know, those are the trips that you can take with this, with the plane. I mean, my wife and I, we tried to go one day, and, you know, I was, you know, I went over Door County, and I think I can't remember the airport I stopped at, but I was on my way to Mackinac, but the weather was kind of, you know, it was marginal VFR, and, you know, for me, if I was in there by myself or with a friend, I'd probably do it, but I didn't want to, you know, freak my wife out, so I just kind of, I turned around back home.
Yeah.
And, you know, was it the right decision? Well, for me it was, just because I don't want her to get nervous about it. And, you know, when you bring passengers with you, you don't want them to have an unpleasant experience, especially in a smaller general aviation aircraft.
Yeah.
And, you know, which probably brings us to, you know, to another subject about really, you know, what is the right aircraft, you know, for you? Everybody always talks about it. You know, what's your mission? And I mean, you know what my mission is, you know, here to Arizona.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, and that's kind of what we did. So I said, okay, you know, let's, you know, take your plane and go see if it works. And it doesn't work. At least mine doesn't work for that mission. You know, if you had an SR-22 with 300 horsepower, very doable now.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a turbocharge, you know, that route that they wanted us to do, that reroute with ATC, you know, bigger useful load, more gas. You got oxygen, you can get above the MEA, you know, you can take that route
right.
Safely and feel okay and get above that junk.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can't. See, I like that because we were operating with, at some point when we were in Albuquerque waiting to do all that, the plane was the obstacle, right?
Exactly.
You know, so that was kind of neat. You end up getting your, developing your, what is perceived as a want list, right? Then it becomes a need list,
right?
You know, not need list, but need list. But you end up you understand what you need in an airplane,
right? And when you know we burned that extra day in Albuquerque, so we went to Arizona the next day. We were going to meet with a guy, Roger, that has an SR-22, normally aspirated.
Yeah.
That a guy that I met on COPA, very friendly gentleman, and, you know, more than happy to spend time with me and talk about, you know, turbo versus non-turbo out there, the type of flying that he does. You know, my whole thing is, what's the climb out rate?
Right.
You know, he says very easily at gross he can climb out at 500 feet a minute, which is respectable.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
You know, that's something, you know, that it's a comfortable margin. But when I did that leg from Scottsdale to Albuquerque, that I think it was a Labor Day weekend, and then, you know, I took off in the morning at Scottsdale, and it was me, my wife. I took an instructor with me because I don't know the terrain.
Yeah.
And you know, we had lunch in Albuquerque, and we're taking off, and it's warm and density. I think the field elevation there, don't quote me again, 5,800 feet maybe rings a bell or something like that, and because there were so many numbers we looked at on the way there back and forth. But with density altitude, I think it was probably something in the area of 8,000 feet.
Yeah.
And climbing out at 200 feet a minute, it's not comfortable.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like the ground, like you never left the ground.
Yeah.
And then when I flew the Sedona once a few years back with an instructor, again, I rented the same plane, the SR-20, and again, the same deal. You know, we went, had lunch, you know, great. Took us 29 minutes to get there.
Right.
You know, versus driving 2 hours. But again, not having that extra 100 horsepower or that turbocharged motor, taking off, getting in ground effect to pick up speed, sitting like that for about 500 feet.
Yeah.
We practice that here. I get it. You know, but when you have to do it, you know, it becomes another story.
Exactly.
And it's just like you said, you know, it's, I think that the gentleman that I spoke with in Arizona that I'm mentioning, Roger, you know, you kind of take things for, you know, you kind of take advantage of some things that, like, you know, for granted. You take some things for granted, I should say, that, you know, you have a higher horsepower motor or you have a turbocharge, and these are some things that you don't think about that we actually had to think about on this trip because of the density altitude.
Right, absolutely.
The performance of this plane.
Yeah, you end up getting the density altitude becomes a major issue, and you start developing, like we said, your need issue. Your wants become needs at that point. You want to be the professional and proficient flyer.
I'm laughing because a friend of mine, Tony, he has an RV. I went with him. I think I showed you some videos of his airplane. And he says, flying RV and climb out at an easy 1,500 to 2,500 feet per minute, which is so true. That thing's like a little rocket that he has, you
know? Absolutely.
And, when you look at the performance of those planes, you know, solo, these guys will take off in like 350 feet.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, with me and him in it and fuel, it's like 500 feet, you're off the ground. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
This is nice.
Exactly. I like it.
It's nice.
You know, there's a couple guys out here on Twitter that I asked the question, okay, well, people are asking what your mission was it's obviously we figured it out. Okay, you want to fly your family from Chicago to Phoenix, and that's just one destination, but and luggage and a dog, right?
Right.
And all that. So I posed the question out on Twitter. And I asked a couple people, hey, what kind of plane should he get? And we got some feedback. So one guy, somebody threw out right off the bat a 172. Yay or nay?
Nay.
Nay. Why?
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a fan of a low wing as opposed to the high wing. And, that's just from an aesthetic deal.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if that makes any sense to some people. But to me, I just kind of like the low wing.
Right, exactly. So then they threw out the, I tweeted back to them and said, hey, that's not going to work. Chicago to Phoenix with the family. They said, let's go something bigger, 210. Well, that's a high wing still, so we got to go with the low wing. So
right.
Somebody said, hey, they posed the idea that, hey, this is something tricky, maybe a Cherokee 6.
I did look at the Cherokee 6. The only thing is my wife doesn't like it because she doesn't like fixed gear.
Yeah.
She likes retractable gear.
Slows her down.
Yeah, so I guess there's something sexy about having the gear up.
Yeah.
And, so that's her...
I can't believe your wife is helping you dictate what to get on an airplane. That's awesome.
Yeah, she... When we first came here, when I was going to start... flying lessons with Rob, who called in earlier, and we came back over here by the Leading Edge Flying Club by the hangar, and pulled up next to the gate and kind of punched the code in, and she's like, geez, she goes, we're on the other side of the fence. People heard me tell this story 50 times, and I was like, yeah, we are on the other side of the fence. Yeah. She goes, if you learn how to do this, she goes, I'll never go to O'Hare again. Well, it's already happened. I mean, she won't go to O'Hare. She doesn't want to have anything to do with the scanners, and when we had the driver pick us up in Arizona, you heard her, Lynn, she said that Mesa Airport, because we were flying in there, because there's no scanners for security there. And she goes, well, they have scanners there now. It's just like, oh, my wife's not going to be happy with that. So when I get back home, my wife's like, well, why don't we go out there? Why don't you and I go out there now and just go spend a, weekend or something? I'm like, yeah, we can do that. I said, but I got some bad news. I said, prior to that, I should say, she was just like, I don't think I can do that trip with your plane. She says, that's just too far of a ride, And I was like, yeah. I said it could be done, but it is far. And she's like, we can just do this the other way. And I'm like, okay, fine. And she's like, maybe you can just get your plane and, with your partners and, fly around and do what you do and that sort of thing. Okay. So then when I tell her that the Mesa has, the scanners now, she's just like, well, I'm never going to get there.
Yeah.
She's like, what are you going to get yourself now? And I was like, well, Al Waterloo, he really loves the Malibu.
Yes.
It's pressurized. We can bring the dog. Nobody has to wear a mask.
Yeah.
That night we could have left. We could have just punched through everything and go.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, so I started showing her, YouTube videos of that. And she was like, wow, that thing's huge, at the interior. And, it's sixth place and it's, it's got a nice ramp appeal.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that Piper Malibu is a nice nice aircraft.
Yeah, it is. It's on Twitter here, somebody threw it out. I didn't, believe it or not, I did not throw out the idea of the Malibu. And somebody came up and said, how about, they went on this, the Mooney, They said it's great for cross countries, but the useful load's not there.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said, okay, no budget, PC-12. Well, that's like a no-brainer, right?
Right.
But then the Malibu was thrown out there. And that's, I think that's, you know, people out here are saying that.
Yeah, it's like I told one of my partners, I said, you know what you got to do is you actually have to, you know, you have to go fly everything.
Right.
You have to find somebody that has it, and you have to go with them, and you got to see what it, you know, what you think.
Right.
And, you know, like my wife and I, we did take a Mooney Acclaim out because it's fast.
Right.
And, you know, you can make that trip. But, you know, it was, I couldn't give it a fair shake because it was really bumpy that day, and she was almost nauseous in the back, and it just wasn't a good ride. So, you know, I would probably go for a ride in that again. Again, that useful load is, it is weak.
Yeah.
You know, and, but, you know, the fact that you have like those Ovations or the turbocharged ones, I mean, they cook, man.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You're cooking with gas at that point.
I mean, they just move.
Yeah.
You know? And the SR22 and the 22 turbos, they move too. I mean, that's just kind of, but again, you know, you drilled this Malibu in my head so much, even though I've kind of liked them, but, you know, you've really sold me on this kind of, the whole beauty of having pressurization and not having to wear anything.
Yeah. Well, now think about, okay, so if you did, let's say you got something else that wasn't pressurized, well, you're going to bring in your dog with. Well, you know, you can't really put a mask on your dog. Your dog's going to pass out, you know, and it's like, okay, you killed the
Everybody
dog.
Everybody freaks out. All of a sudden, I'm the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, killed the who are you going to kill next?
That's it.
Yeah, pull the chute. I'm out of here.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're like the Clark W. Griswold of Aunt Edna's dog, you know, carrying it on the back of the bumper. But anyway, yeah, so you have that. So you have all these different verbs. You got to bring a dog with. You got to bring your family. You got to, you know, your family is probably not going to like stopping from here to Dubuque to Kansas City to Hutchinson to Amarillo to Albuquerque to Phoenix.
Right.
You can make this. You can get decent speed out of a Malibu. You can get 200 knots. You can get 220 knots if you're doing high speed cruise.
And you know they're light. I mean, you know, between the two of them, they're 220 pounds together.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, I can bring all the gas I want.
Right. Absolutely. So you start bringing all the gas, and then you end up
making one stop.
Yeah, you make one stop, and you fly to Albuquerque or Amarillo. One stop, take a leak. Stretch the legs, and then boom, you continue on. It's really, you break it down into a one-stop trip, very comfortable, you know, at that speed, you know, at those speeds, maybe 5.5 hours, 6 hours
out
there.
Yeah, and it's real doable.
Very doable, and all that. And I think a lot of people, I know we talked about this in the airplane, you know, a lot of people say, oh, man, that's a lot of airplane. But, you know, you stay sharp, you actually use this, you're going to be going, I know you talk about going to the coast and the trip, and all that, and you know, you're not just going for $100 hamburger. You're actually using the utility exactly what that airplane was built for.
Right, and not only that, yeah, you could make the argument that it's too much plane. You know, how many times do you have that many people with you? But you know, I can see it being something that you, if it is too much plane, and if you're going to utilize it, you're going to eventually grow into it.
Oh, absolutely.
And you're going to end up taking trips and going places that you probably wouldn't have done before because
right.
You have the right machine now.
Right, absolutely. I think you're going to have, just like on this trip, you're going to end up going through an education process of having that capable airplane. Because right now, the only route that you know it's satisfying is that Albuquerque or the Chicago to Phoenix.
Right.
But now, hey, you can have Chicago to Seattle, and then maybe even Seattle up to Alaska. And you're going to start being able to explore and look at places that you were never able to look at before.
Right.
And that's exactly the thing, growing into it.
Right. No, that's the whole thing. And you know, and I like so many different things, and I mean, we've talked about twins, and I like twins as well, and you know, my friends heard me talk about twins also, and you know, there's just so much out there. I mean, I like everything is the problem. And but you know, you have to pick one. And yeah, that's really what it all boils down to. But there's something about pressurization that my wife really likes a lot. I mean, you know, our friend with the 310 over at Leading Edge, I mean, you know, he would always tell me about pressurization. He's like, you know, you go and, you know, you come down and you still feel refreshed.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, you still feel good. And, you know, you're not tired or anything like that. And that was kind of, when I was kind of twin crazy for a while, even though I'm not a fan of high wing, I was always looking at like that, the Skymaster.
Yeah.
You know, pressurized one, which, you know, people knock it a lot and, you know, either, you know, there's a lot to say about that aircraft as well. But I mean, there's a lot of things I like about that plane also. Although, like I said, high wing's not my, first choice. But the thing was, is that it had a lot of pieces on it that, you know, single line thrust. So you had two motors again. You can have ice. They have air conditioning.
Right.
They're pressurized. You know, you have all the pieces there, except
right.
you have to find the right one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's exactly what you need to do. And, finding the right one, you know, that's part of the fun of it. You know, you start looking at all these things and it becomes an obsession or an addiction looking at these airplanes. But, you know, you end up having a good time, searching for all this. And, you know, that's part of the journey, you know. Hey, buying an airplane that you're going to grow into. Now, another guy, some guy that we know, Mr. Mark Eppner, he tweeted in, what about a Meridian?
Yeah, well, the Meridian's nice. I mean, who wouldn't like that? I mean, now you have a jet motor in the front,
yeah,
the turboprop. And, you know, I sat in the one that's actually in the hangar next door to us. And my wife and I went in that one. The gal opened it up for us just to take a peek at it. And that's really a nice plane. I know that guy flew that around the world, actually. And, you know, that's I think there was even a book that I saw over there at the hangar that they put together. And, yeah, the Meridian's nice. And, you know, that's that startup that we hear on the beginning of your show.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's something about that really makes you crazy.
Absolutely.
It's not, you know, that one, you know, you have to get something in the early... I think we even touched on that a little bit, early 90s, you know, and if depending how you can structure something like that with a couple of guys, that could be, you know, that could be doable. That would be something that I probably wouldn't do by myself.
Right, right.
You know, just because of the cost for that particular aircraft. But that is, that is a nice plan. I mean, you're talking 280, you know, you're going 300 miles an hour now with that thing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's something you can grow into. Hey, that's a... That's where the Malibu comes in, stepping stones.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely right, and it's nice. You know, it's a nice aircraft. It really is. I do it.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, who wouldn't?
Absolutely.
You'd be lying if you said you wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, I'm okay. I wouldn't.
You're a liar.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, hey, you know what? I had a great time on that on this trip. I thought. There's so many benefits. You learn, you know, we learn how to interact with the IFR system, you know, how to operate, how to fly an airplane. I think you fly an airplane. By the end of the time, on the last leg home, I was so impressed the way that you flew the airplane, you know, and you got it, you nailed it down. You didn't want the autopilot. You didn't see a need for an autopilot.
No, it's really, it was really neat. It's, you know, you go up, you set the autopilot, you go, and then, okay, what do you do now? You know, you have a conversation, you talk, but, you know, it's almost like driving a manual versus, an automatic car.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, you know, you drive an automatic. I mean, all my cars are manual, as you know.
Yeah.
But that's what it's like with driving without the autopilot. You know, there's got to be some, you know, little adjustments you got to make here and there,
right?
And you know, you're not like sleeping at the wheel,
exactly.
And that's was really what was neat about it.
Yeah.
And so I really, you know, I really ended up enjoying it a lot, which was great.
Yeah, absolutely, that was awesome. And the first parts of the trip, you know, you're on the phone with your family or your buddies, and you're like, oh yeah, this guy's a real jackwagon. He's not even letting me use the autopilot. But then, you know, hey, at the end of it.
Like, yeah, and you tell me that still on the way back, that, you know, you're still not using the autopilot until you get to the very end.
Yeah, right.
And that's sort of, which brings me to a question here. It's I know we talked about it when we sat down having breakfast, and, you know, we were going through the regulation and, you know, everything that we do. And maybe just for some listeners out there, I mean, what would you say how, you know, these, we spent Monday through Saturday together, and obviously I have to do the written, and we have to bang out the approaches over here and that sort of thing, but how much would you say that we had accomplished on a trip like this, just to kind of give some people an idea?
I would probably say about 85% of it.
Okay.
And that's a pretty fair assessment, you know, and okay, so now you know how to fly the airplane, you know how to work the GPS, you know how to program everything, you know how to set yourself up, you know how to do the alarms checklist. We didn't shoot very many approaches on this trip. But now you know all the setup, how to organize yourself. We went through a lot of this oral review and prep. We looked at charts. We also set a good platform for you to start going out there in a real-world scenario using websites and apps and iPads and things like this.
Right.
As soon as you get your ticket, boom, there you go.
Yeah, and my partner in the plane, Kevin, he had called me up, and he says, wow, he goes, I was waiting for you guys. He goes, I was tuned in the Chicago approach. He goes, you sound like a real pro, he said. You know, and he said, the way you're rattling off. And I said, well, he said, you know,
yeah,
a lot of practice this week.
Absolutely. You picked up, I think it was your last clearance that you picked up, and they're like, cleared is filed, maintained 3,000, expect 7,010, departure is 120.55, and blah, 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 squawk this, that. And then the readback, you're like, as filed, 3,000, 7 and 10, 2055, squawk 2126, or something like that. You know, it's like, it's awesome.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it's funny you say that, because I remember how I ended up getting started with flying was a friend of mine, George, at work, is neighbors with a guy named Nate down the block. And I know Nate as well at work downtown. And Nate actually bought a Bonanza A36.
Yeah.
And it was a 2000 Bonanza A36. You know, a really nice plane. And this is going back probably about 4 or 5 years ago that he took me for a ride. And he was with his instructor. His instructor was in the right seat. And they went to go shoot some approaches. And Troy, Waukesha, I think. And, you know, we came back. And I remember I was sitting in the back. And, you know, he takes off, and I was like, wow, this is like a real airliner.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just like, wow, this is pretty incredible stuff. And, you know, listening to these guys mix it up with ATC and talking to them, and they're like, what do you think? I'm like, man, this sounds Chinese to me.
Yeah.
I'll never be able to do this. I remember Nate telling me, he goes, if I can do this, he goes, you can do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then, you know, the decision was made to finally, you know, maybe take a stab at it. And, you know, it was good. And, you know, doing the whole private went fine. And, but again, the whole IFR thing, there's just something great about, you know, having that ticket. Now that I see, you know, what you can do, you know, you can get out of the airport now.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, or get in someplace. And like I said, prior to you and I going out, I had a handful of lessons prior to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rob, who was my instructor for my private, and was between, you know, him and John, another guy, we were, you know, I was kind of working with both of them just because of scheduling and that sort of thing. And I remember we shot the ILS-16 down here, my very first. We had to make a lesson out of it.
Yeah.
We went to get some food in Wisconsin to go eat, and then we flew back. And when we were flying out, John says, he goes, you see that fog over Kenosha or Waukegan? I said, well, you're IFR, it doesn't matter. I said, you know what I mean? So we did that pickup in the air, like you said. And so we were actually trying to make some decisions, and because we didn't know if we were going to be able to get into Palwaukee.
Yeah.
You know, we were going to have to go to DuPage, but we shot the ILS-16 here down to minimums.
Yeah.
And we got back to the clubhouse up at Leading Edge, and I couldn't stop talking about it for 30 minutes.
Right.
I mean, it was like Batman. It was just like, you know, you had this fog. You know, you see all the lights from the towns underneath you, and you go through it, and then all of a sudden he goes, there's a runway. He goes, and don't miss it. I said, I won't miss it. And, I mean, I couldn't stop talking about it for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy. And then, you know, I said, all right, we got to start doing this. And then I started to take, like I said, only took a handful of lessons, but then, you know, we were plagued with some maintenance problems for a while, which have all been past us, and it's just fantastic now. I mean, the plane ran great, didn't it?
Right. Oh, it was awesome. It was,
I mean, there wasn't a hiccup. I mean, we put 26 and a half hours on that plane, and we burned a half a quarter oil.
Unbelievable.
That's it.
It was awesome. I got to say that the SR-20 was a great platform to accomplish that trip. You know, it allowed you to get your pace down. It was going at the pace that you needed to learn at.
Right.
And then it was also incredibly comfortable.
Oh, it's so great. It's like an 85 Eldorado.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember when we came back when we were talking about the about how we didn't burn any oil in there. And I, what was it when I asked Mark when I went up and we came back to the club, and I said, how much oil did you put on it the week before when you went to Cedar Rapids? And he was like, I don't know, maybe a quart. I said, no, think about it. I said, it was nothing. He goes, yeah, maybe it was nothing. Because I said, it was the same thing that I put in, nothing.
Yeah.
Exactly. I just couldn't believe it.
That was awesome. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
it started right up every single time. You know, there's nothing. I had complete confidence in it, you know, and especially by the time we got to Delhart, And then we're going to cross that mountain range near Albuquerque. And the night, it's like, you know what? This thing's running like a top. It's fine. It never occurred to me once that there could be a mechanical problem.
Yeah, I felt the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I think this was a great way of training. From an instructional standpoint, I'm a firm believer in this. We have just a small chunk to figure out now, and I think you're going to have no problem breezing through that. You know, the biggest problem is getting the written done.
Yeah, I'll get to it when I get to it.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be my own fault. You know, that's going to be my biggest hang up. I just have to get it done. I just have to go to a school where I go for 3 days crash course.
Yeah,
and just like I did with my private, and do it that way. And that was kind of a realization when I did take that course. You know, I took a 3 day course. The instructor was great. Really, he flies a jet now for somebody out here, but has left that facility where he was at. But I said, you know what, why don't we take up one of those 172s out for a ride? Never been in one of those high-wind planes. And so the guy takes me out, and, we're flying around, and he taps me on the side. He goes, you see that? I go, what? He goes, there's traffic. I said, this thing doesn't tell you there's traffic in it?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, it's all dials. There's no glass. And, I mean, I just had a totally newfound respect for, the pilots that learn, the old way.
Right.
And I got down on the ground. I called a friend of mine up, and I was just like, wow. I said, I don't know how you guys did it. I don't know if I would even be flying this way. And they would say, yeah, well, you get past this expressway, or you get past Lake Cook Road or that tower, and you know you have to be under 2,500 feet, or, then you're cleared once you get this far west. And, as opposed to the iPad now,
yeah,
which gives you so much information, tells you exactly where you're at. Even like when one of my screens frees up in the plane, I pull out this iPad and I got all the information I want, which I kind of pisses me off. But all I know is what the conversation we were having between your program and Wing X. What I use, I was like, can your program do that?
Yeah, exactly.
And then we're taking pictures on the plane between the Avidyne screens versus what you have on the iPad on the Clarity as far as that safe taxi goes, which is really cool, that option they have now with the runways, the way they turn yellow and red.
Absolutely. We had a great video of the comparison between the two. I was running 4Flight and Wing X, and, we posed a question, which one do you like better?
Right.
And all that. I was running Garmin Pilot on this as well. I've got a little Android tablet, which is neat. And each one of them is cool in their own way, and I think that, I don't know, I want to play around with Wing X a little bit more.
Yeah, I like those extended runways that they give you. You can see if they're grass, you can see if they're asphalt. I mean, it's just, or I should say hard surface, and, it's pretty cool. Even those obstructions that they put out there, those little red deals that you see all around the place. I mean, you got two screens you can put up. You can do a split screen, so you can put your IFR and VFR map. I mean, I could talk about it for 20 minutes, but
exactly.
I told you should probably have that guy in the show.
Yeah, we got to reach out. You reached out to him earlier today, and hopefully I got a video of us comparing 4Flight to Wing X, and I want to send it to him and show him.
Right.
Ask him which one he likes better.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at the guy in our studio audience tonight, Mr. Sam. He needs to, he's going to continue his training and all that, but he's got an iPad, so I don't know. He's got to get a, what would you recommend to Sam? 4Flight or Wing X?
What I like, but I mean, if you haven't purchased anything yet, I think all these guys give you like a 30-day free trial.
Yeah.
The thing with Wing X is, it kind of reminds me of the Garmin 430. It does a lot of things. You just have to know where to find them. And I think that's probably what you have to do with that. And all these guys, they have videos on YouTube on how to learn their device, or I should say their program or application, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And, I would try them all and then kind of make your own assessment. I mean, I did try 4Flight for free. I think I even did the 3-month version. That I paid for, and I had Garmin Pilot and all this stuff, but I liked Wing X the best out of all of them, and they keep improving stuff, and I actually have a suggestion for him now that I have to probably email him and just let him know on something that I thought that would be pretty cool on it, and he's real good about that. You send him an email, about what you want, and you know, they change the program up, and you know, they come up with an update, and they'll do what you want it to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, you know, it's always north up, but now you can track up.
Yeah,
and you hit it. I showed you that, and just boom, it turns around.
It's
and
awesome.
It's neat stuff, man.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Those things are pretty cool.
It's neat stuff. The guy does a lot of cool, a lot of cool things with it.
Yeah, very valuable tool for getting around the country.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It's just like, you know, like with any of them, you know, you can be sitting down doing your flight planning, you know, prior to getting to the airport. You can, you know, you can file on your iPad. You know, you showed me all that, and you know, I go to the airport and see if they cleared me as filed, and you know, if they take my route or if they reroute. You know, and it's just a cool little tool. You can do stuff before you get to the FBO.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
it's a great thing.
You know, get it done. And you know, I mean, you showed me all that stuff, and like I said, it clicked, and, you know, like you said, you showed it to me once or twice, and then we're done.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it was good because you're doing it every single day.
Yeah, multiple times a day.
Yeah, you know, through all these lakes, and so it's just like, you know, you don't do it for a day and then get away for 5 days and then come back to it and review what you did the week before or what we talked about. You know, if you're training and then, you know, your lesson stops just when you're probably starting to click on something. I mean, what we were able to do, we were just able to go through until you get it.
Right, absolutely.
Which is nice.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to train. I'm going to try to convince people to train that way. You know, a week, you know, you could even turn this into a vacation for somebody. You know, if they can't get away from their wife or their spouse or something like that, hey, bring them along with. You know,
right.
The plane can take it and let's go.
Right. No, exactly right. It's just a great way to do it. And like I said, not even just for IFR, even for somebody that's working on their private.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's really just, really just a great way to do it. I gave you the example of somebody said, yeah, this guy's daughter soloed in 19 hours or 15 hours or whatever, you know, because like you, went to some, you know, university that has an aviation program.
Right.
But that's all they're doing every day.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. You do it all the time.
I mean, how long did it take you to solo?
It's 10 or 11 hours.
Okay. It took me probably three times that.
Wow.
And I wouldn't have to look at my logbook to find out for sure. Again, I know the reason is because they say you fly the Cirrus and it has all the glass and it's just not as simple, you know, all the systems versus, let's say, flying a 172. And I get it. And there's probably 10 hours. There's probably a 10-hour learning curve is, you know, what some people say. Whether that's the right one or not, I don't know. But it was a minimum of, you know, three times is what it took you.
Yeah.
You know, but again, I'm coming out, you know, once a week, maybe twice, you know, burning an hour or two. And it's just not the, you know, for me, it's not the way to do it.
Right, absolutely. No, I think that's a great way of approaching it. And we don't need to necessarily go out and, you know, you could actually, let's say you take a weekend, maybe a Friday afternoon, and then turn this into a weekend. You could really make this into a pretty cool trip. And get a lot done, even in three, you know, 2.5 days.
Yeah, you know, take that a step further, and you know, go 2 weekends in a row.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, bam, it's done. It's over. You got a week to absorb everything, and then, bam, you're out.
Right.
And it's not like that's a huge amount of time.
And I think, from a cost perspective, from the student, I think it's so much better as well.
Yeah.
Because you know, you are getting it done. You are immersed in it. You are doing it every day. You're not, you know, you're just, as we did. We're just plowing forward. As opposed to, you know, coming back, reviewing, plowing forward. I mean,
right.
You're just going to it.
Right.
And you're just doing it.
Picking up and going for it. No, I definitely agree. I love it.
Yeah. And so I think that's how come some of these schools that offer these 10-day, you know, crash courses, if that's what you want to call them, or somebody comes out. I think that's probably why it's so popular.
Yeah.
You know, because from a financial standpoint, you know, you could get it done.
Right.
Providing you had the prerequisite of the written and some other things that they want you to have.
Yeah.
Which I don't, because I'm just lazy like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, I just want to do it on my own terms.
Yeah.
And, you know, so.
That's awesome. No, I definitely agree. I think there's a couple guys, somebody that I've been texting with throughout the show, saying that, you know, this is awesome. You can really learn. You can't learn to fly if you go out once a week. It's just way too tough. You know, he loves this idea of going out and the protracted, you know, instruction concept of
right.
Going out and doing a trip like this or a couple different trips. He says, hey, you're developing a little business concept.
Well, you know, I guess you can say that. But again, like I said, you know, for some people, you know, that once or twice a week, that's all they can devote to it. You
right.
Know what I mean? But I'm just saying, for somebody that can devote a week of their life to it.
Yeah.
You know, it would be a nice way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, because the majority, I mean, I didn't learn that way until right now. I mean,
yeah.
I was coming out to the airport once or twice a week, and that's just the way that I had to do it at that point in time.
Right.
Because, like I said, I disappear for 3 weeks or so with my family during this time is when we go on vacation.
Right.
And, you know, that's just kind of how it works out. But, again, it's not, if you can devote the time, it's great. Or, like you say, you know, mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
Yeah, I know you love it. You love the Malibu, too.
Yeah, I love the Malibu.
How many times did you say Malibu?
Well, it's how big is your bank account now? Because you got $100 every time I.
Yeah, it's you know, I think the down payment's probably there in a used one. Not as many times as you say it. I mean, it's you got to get a Malibu, man. There'd be no question if you had a Malibu, just punch right through that stuff. You know, if we had a Malibu, we'd be out of here.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully you go home and instead of dreaming of sugar plums, you dream of Malibus.
You know, it's just, you know, and the disease that I have, and guys that are listening to the show know, you know, I mean, I go out to lunch with guys, and, you know, Tony, the guy that had sent in the text earlier about flying at 1,500 or 2,500 feet a minute, I mean, I'll make him crazy at the lunch table saying, looking at flight aware, saying, this guy's doing 235 knots with this little plane, or this guy's doing 275.
Yeah.
One of those Lance Airs, you know,
yeah,
the turboprop, and it's just like, can you believe it? You know, and it's just like, that one's actually pressurized, too. You know,
yeah.
I start talking stupid.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just like, all right, you know, who do you get together with this thing? And, you know, so who knows? I mean, there's just so much out there.
Absolutely.
You know, and so the narrow, like I said, I have to go for rides.
Yeah,
is
right.
What I have to go for. And, you know, we talked about everything from the Saratoga, you know, to the Mooney, you know, to a Cirrus. I mean, and again, to the, you know, and all, you know, you keep, you know, talking to me about Malibu because I think you're so in love with it, it's not even funny.
But, well, hey, I got to say that I have I got a little crush on it. Okay,
right.
Whatever, but... I think it's really if you look at everything that happened to us on this trip, and you look at, if you were to boil it down into one airplane, a Malibu would solve everything.
Right. For me, anyway.
Yeah, for you. That would fit your mission. You
right.
know, you got a dog running around the cabin. You know, it's not going to pass out and die. You know,
right.
You have a turbocharge to get over the mountains. You got something that's cabin class because you're going. All the way, you know, with your family, so it's comfortable. So that means you got it's comfortable for your family for these long trips. You got the speed and the range, so you could do this in one stop.
Right.
It's really, I mean, name another airplane that's a piston airplane that can really do that.
Right.
You know, $300,000 or less. You really, you know,
right.
There's very few.
Yeah, because that used market, that's where you're at on that plane.
Yeah.
You know, so it's I got like Mark Eppner with the Meridium. I mean, you're double that price now, a little bit north of there.
Right.
But then, you know, you have to search out somebody that you want to be with.
Right.
On that one. That Meridian's nice, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're both nice planes.
Yeah, absolutely. I love
you know,
it.
But I think the pressurized is something that my family would like.
Yeah.
You know, there's just no doubt. There's no, now the PC-12. That the other guy mentioned, yeah, if money wasn't an object.
Yeah, right.
You know, we took one out of DuPage once. We chartered one over there to go down to a friend of mine's birthday party down in Memphis, and that was really a sweet treat.
Yeah.
You know, if you ever did it, you know, get together with five of your jerk-off friends and go somewhere, you know, everybody split it, then you'll be glad that you did.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, but it's but that's a really nice plane, too.
Absolutely. No, I like that. That's good, you know. But that's a whole other animal. You're up in, you're talking millions.
Yeah, no, I know. I got to sit right seat in that, which was nice. The guy goes, we do this again. He goes, I'll let you do the takeoff. I'm like,
nice.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Man, is it smooth.
Yeah, oh, it's awesome.
It is smooth.
Very cool.
You know, but, yeah, you can always dream.
Yeah, right. But can you believe it? I love the, you know, this is one of the things that I love about the show is that, you know, this there's no way that we could have possibly fit this stuff in 30 minutes.
Oh, no, there's just no way. It just doesn't happen. I have a picture that a friend of mine texted here that I sent them. Check this out. That's my wife and I that we were going to St. Louis, Missouri, and she fell asleep, and I took a picture of myself. Of us, I should say, and I fell asleep as well, is what it looks like there. See that? And then I show that to everybody.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Me. Fell asleep
just passed out.
See, I can't, my wife laughs at me because I fall asleep when we drive. but I don't fall asleep when I fly. You know, it's just something that I do. I just can't stay up when I drive. I don't know why that is. Terrible.
Yeah, that is terrible. Wake up.
I don't know. What are you going to do?
Yeah, whatever. But, yeah. Well, anyway, this is an incredible show. I had a lot of fun. I mean, this whole week has just been pretty awesome.
Oh, it's been a blast. I mean, like I said, I wish I would do it all over again.
Yeah. Oh, I would, too.
Like tomorrow morning.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, maybe let's go.
Well, I want to fly east. I want to go to Hilton Head. So, but I can't bring you because not enough useful load.
Are you calling me fat?
No, just a little thick.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's something that's pretty cool. No, yeah, we'll it's time for you to enjoy the cross, the long legs, and everything like that with exactly the way that you want to fly them.
Yeah, not exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, that was what a great episode tonight. It was nice having you on the show. It was nice flying with you all week. Sam, our little our studio audience guy, he flew with him today, and his brother. It was awesome flying with him and all that. And what a great time just talking.
Oh, it was great. I mean, I'm glad we got along. Otherwise, you know, I might have had to turn around after the rebuke. I can't stand this guy.
Yeah.
And but after some conversation that we had during the week, I said I think we're going to be fine. I said I think we're going to get along just fine.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's tell the same dirty jokes to each other and, you know, whatever.
Somebody on Facebook today said, hey, I hope you play bits from the audio of the cockpit. And I'm like, you know what, there's this unwritten pilot code of, like, Las Vegas. Whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Yeah,
whatever's said in the cockpit stays in the cockpit.
And then I think I messaged back and I said stays in the cockpit. And but there was some great conversation. And, yeah, I guess you had to be there and you weren't.
Yeah.
You know, you got to come on the next trip.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And that sort of thing. But no, it was a great time. I had a blast this week. I think you did too. And, you know, it's just a really great learning experience and just a great way to, you know, see that part of the country as well, if anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. No.
You know.
It was great on all fronts and I can't wait to do it again. Hopefully we have the opportunity, which I'm sure we will.
Mark Upner had a great idea about just getting guys together to go do something like this.
Yeah, I think we need to put our heads together and promote that to the listeners, and we'll do a simple flight flyout maybe to a cool national park or something like that.
Somewhere.
Yeah, Glacier National Park.
I'm there.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, cool. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
No, thanks for having me. It was great spending the week with you. And you're a little late today. It's 10:26, isn't it?
Yeah, that's all right. It's holidays. There's no rules.
All right, holiday edition.
Yeah, the holiday edition of Simple Flight Radio. So it was nice and relaxing. It's great having Sam in the audience tonight.
Hey, Sam, that's the spot I sit in, actually.
Yeah.
I'm in Mark's chair.
Yeah, exactly. Well, very good. We have a great show coming up next week. We're going to be doing our looking back on 2012 and looking forward to 2013 and giving updates and making some predictions. It should be a lot of fun.
I'll probably be sitting in here. Maybe I come by and visit
again.
Yeah,
you probably will. I hope you are. You know, and then let's throw that out to anybody. If you're in the area, please stop by, listen in. We've always got some headsets plugged in, ready to go, and join us for dinner beforehand. We go to a little local restaurant. So,
sounds good.
Yeah, anyway, thank you very much, everybody. Happy holidays for those of you who are celebrating Christmas. Be safe and enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next week. It's going to be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Anyway, blue skies, and as Mark says,
tailwinds.
Tailwinds, absolutely. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult?
Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.